Okay. Freebooters. I guess it's been a while, so this is season two. Freebooters, too fast, too bootious. How are you doing? Right, we've got a lot to talk about. So I've got an idea to kick off with.
It's been a very long time.
It has. And there have been people, there was a time when people were like asking for it, and now I think people have kind of
Just keep
like
it
sort of thought that this might be in the archives now, but no, we're back.
up. Yeah, no, it was, it's never gone away. We were just waiting for our studio to renew us. There was a lot of contract negotiations behind the scenes.
Got green wall now.
Chris was holding out for a yacht as part of his contract, so also it's been so long that Chris's man bun has become like a man plume.
Man plume, my plumage. I
You
brushed my hair today, because I wanted to just, like I don't usually brush it because it's curly and awful like that. So
yeah,
I've got it up in a
you do a
yeah. And
frizzy
actually, to
brush
be fair, when it's hot in the summer here, which is like 3 days of the year, it is kind of nice to put it up. But it's
Yeah, no, yeah. Shaved head when it's hot, when it like, because I just sort of let my hair grow until I get frustrated with it and then shave it. But well, yeah, if there's hot weather, I just shave it and it feels so nice.
Yeah, it that is kind of nice, but I kind of like the attention of long hair. It's
You mean the attention the hair gives you?
the attention the hair, yes, not the attention I have to give the hair. Right, so I think one of the things I've been meaning to kind of talk about this on my channel at some point for some time, and we've talked about it off camera before,
Your green walls
but
as well. Sorry, yeah. I'm
the
just, I'm
green
just.
walls, yeah, that was in
Yeah,
the
no, that was pretty good.
negotiations.
Yeah, that's
Yeah,
nice.
had to
Yeah.
really
Anyway, sorry.
argue for this.
Keep going.
So we don't talk about Linux anymore, and we don't even talk
No.
about Linux that much, not on camera.
No.
And
No.
I kind of wanted to address this because obviously my channel, most of my views are on Linux-based videos, and there's a lot of people that are subscribed and follow me for Linux content. So I kind of want to touch base with it. But for us, like Linux is kind of feature complete. Like I'm running the latest
Yeah.
Debian, and it's Debian stable, and I have done now for like 3 years or something like that, and I've no issues. Okay, admittedly, not all of the software is as up to date as it might be on something like Arch,
I
which
don't care. I don't care.
no.
There's bits of like I want an up-to-date Mesa for gaming, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm not even sure that makes a huge difference on my hardware. But yeah, I don't think, and there's certain software, like I have LibreOffice around. I've actually got it as an app image because I don't want it to update because I don't fucking care. It's just rope, you know, when occasionally somebody sends me a docx or an XLS, just so that I can open it. I want that never to update because I don't care about it, you know. It's yeah, and even the software I use, like I mean, I know web browsers have to be updated, I know the security updates, but you know, in terms of wanting to have the latest software for features or whatever, I'm past that now. I want everything to stay the same.
And
I want
also
to play with new
there
toys and stuff occasionally, but I want the stuff I use to just stay the same.
But you've settled on vanilla Arch, and I settled on stable Debian, which is kind of almost the bimodal,
Two ends of
points
the
of Linux,
also
yeah.
that. That sort of horseshoe theory, I think, actually works with that. There's a similarity between them as well. They're kind of opposites, but similar.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I do like about Debian that is what you like about Arch in the converse, if that makes any sense, which is I like how the Debian repositories are packaged, and you like how the Arch stuff is packaged. Because with Debian, they're quite attentive, and there's a lot of stuff like telemetry that gets disabled by default and all that kind of stuff. Like the defaults in Debian, which aren't always the defaults of the source code, upstream, they are. I like them as a general rule of thumb. But I can also understand why like developers might not necessarily like them. I know that there's been a lot of theming politics over the years because of this, but I don't
Well,
care
it
about
sometimes
themes.
just goes far too far. I remember this is a long time ago. This is 10 plus, I think maybe more like 15 years ago. The Debian WordPress package. was an absolute mess. Like they messed around with it. There was a time where they messed around with it so much that it wouldn't actually run on Debian. Like they really fucked around with it a lot. And I think Arch is sort of forced upstream to become a bit better. I might be overstating Arch's role in that, but cause I think most distros fuck around with upstream a bit less now.
Yeah. I mean the long short of it, particularly for me, is Debian works as expected. I did give myself the license to use Flatpaks if I need something more updated, or app images, and I do use a handful of app images, or like pre-compiled binaries. But I've yet to install Flatpak on this latest version of Debian, which is, are we up to 12 or something now? Or?
Yeah, I don't want to get into a, you know, is Flatpak good or not, but a while back I tried to do as much as possible on Flatpak. I was like, let's embrace this. This is kind of the way things are heading. Let's try and do it. So I did Steam on there and a bunch of my browser on there. But I remember Inkscape on there. I couldn't get it to match my system theme, and there's instructions on how to do it, and none of them worked. Like there's little idiosyncrasies like that, and it's also, I think this is probably true for all distros. It's somehow more hassle than just installing through your package manager.
Yeah,
and when things go wrong, it's much harder to fix because it's in the container where you can't quite interact with it. You know. So I ended up just completely getting rid of Flatpak altogether. I think being on Arch helps with that because the AUR makes it easier to, you know, you don't have the thing on Debian where the way of getting up to date software. But yeah, I've tried and I really don't like Flatpaks.
Yeah, I mean, both Arch and Debian have massive repositories. I remember one time when I was on Arch and I set myself a rule where I didn't use the AUR and I just stuck with Arch stuff. And I think I might have dipped into the occasional app image or binary, but really, the standard Arch repositories are nothing to be sniffed at. The AUR is great for particularly like interesting, obscure, maybe super updated or a developer version of a piece of software. But I never found myself needing the AUR. It was useful there for. There were a few things like if I wanted a specific like third party app, basically.
Yeah,
why do I call it an app? Like a third-party application.
Yeah,
my God. Yeah. But at the end of the day, I'm done. Like even with Debian, they say like Debian's like not like out of date, but has older packages. But it gets updated the best part of every 2 years. So at most, they're 2 years old. Like that's not ancient.
I think when you're a newer Linux user, I think you want to update all the time. You want new because you want to. That's part of because Linux users, most Linux users, like you don't come to Linux just because it's going to be better for you in terms of to work as an operating system to host your applications. It's a bit of a toy. You want something to play with, right? I think most people who come to Linux, at least initially. You want it to be something. It's a hobby. It's something to mess around with. But as we settle down on it, like I less and less, I mean, I still want to play with things, you know, install, you know, if I hear about, you know, an interesting piece of software, I want to play with it. But my operating system, I just want it to stay as it is and work.
It's exactly as I like it.
I've said to you, like, I'm going to end up on Debian at some point, I think. I'm loath to reinstall now because it's working great for me right now. It's hard. It's difficult to replace the system when there's nothing wrong with it. But at some point, I think I'm going to end up on Debian. Yeah, just for the, I don't want to update anymore.
Yeah, I remember when I used to reinstall Nukem Pave every couple of months, it seems. And like now, I think the last, when I updated to Debian, it was because because a new stable came out. I'm only going from stable to stable to stable releases now. And even then,
again, I think
it's like
back in the day, I think there are sort of perfect Linux distros now. I think for a certain user, Arch is perfect. I think for a certain user, Debian is perfect, and you know what others. I think back in the day, there wasn't a perfect Linux distro, so you were always on the like you were always kind of happy, but there was a few you know rough edges or whatever. So you were always on the lookout for something better, which is why we used to, as you say, like Nukem Pave and try out new distros. And then Ubuntu came along, which was a perfect, you know, or at least a good enough distro for most people, but never was for me. Yeah. I think I tried Ubuntu, but in that period, I generally settled on Debian. But yeah, Arch was the one where I really felt like, yeah, no, this is it. Like, that's exactly how I want Linux to be.
Yeah, I think my first full-time Linux distribution was Fedora Core 6 or 7. And whereas I got by on it, it felt somewhat anemic to me. It felt like that there were a lot of things it couldn't do, and a lot of that was my own lack of knowledge. Like, I was very much still learning the Linux place. And Fedora is not the worst, but not the best for a first-time Linux user, right? Like, it's very powerful, it's very modern, it's very good, it's very well put together. But also, there's a, like, if you want a home PC in particular, like, you can tell that Fedora's, it sort of has an ear towards the enterprise. It feels very enterprisey. Sure, so if you want it for a home machine, particularly then when they were very strict on their software licenses, you were going to have to do a lot of like RPM fusion and all that kind of stuff. And Ubuntu came along, and Ubuntu was good, and I really enjoyed Ubuntu. And then Mint came along, and Mint was where it all changed for me, because whilst Mint is 90% Ubuntu, that 10% of having the codex, all of the comprehensive codecs installed, I didn't know if I needed a different codec for a DVD, for an MP3, for all that kind of stuff. Having that out of the box with Linux Mint, which was the first distribution to do that, and it also had a lot of things that, like small quality of life things, really just made it so that you could install Linux Mint, and for most basic computer uses, it was out of the box, ready to go. Even with Ubuntu, you needed to put in some codecs and bits and pieces like that. That would usually involve visiting a couple of forums or reading a couple of man pages or something like that. But if you're new to the Linux world, that is a lot more steps than it is for us today.
This might be slightly unfair to say, but it feels fair to say that Mint might have been the first distro to really put the user experience as the primary concern. In that, like, Debian's, you know, it's got its software policy. Debian feels more like a sort of a social project in a way. You know, they're very much about free software and being, you know, very stable and very, you know, it's about Debian. Fedora is obviously beta for the next Red Hat. You know, you're essentially doing free product testing. What were the other business? SUSE is SUSE.
I did try SUSE in about 1997 when I was very young, and it was very exciting at the time. It was also kind of like, it was difficult for me. But it was difficult back then. So,
I remember SUSE. Yeah, SUSE was one of the earliest distros I tried as well, and then this was back in the day when you installed the default of a distro, it installed every piece of software possible. So you had like seven different text editors and like 14 HTML editors, and just like, you know, which you had back in the day. Ubuntu did a lot. I think Ubuntu was the distro that was like, no, let's trim it down, and the default experience is one text editor, one, you know. Which is Ubuntu, very sensible.
I would say Ubuntu is the first Linux distribution, and again, this one might be unfair, which was genuinely comparable to Windows in functionality.
And taking a lot of cues from Mac, for sure, along the way.
Because we're praising Ubuntu a lot here, but like, Give us 20 minutes and we'll be absolutely slamming.
I was just going to say, Ubuntu's never been my distro. I tried it every now and then when it was you know, the hot new thing. I always ended up going back to Debian and just going like, there's too much it does in a weird way. But I think Mint, as far as I can think, I think Mint was the first one that was just like whatever is best for the user comes first.
Yeah,
because even Arch, they make it very clear that like, because Arch is simple, but Arch is simple for developers. They care about the developer experience. And that's not to say it's not good for certain types of users, but I think Mint was really the one that put that, you know, at the forefront.
Yeah, absolutely. And were we looking at this chart of Linux distributions? Was it from either Gaming on Linux or something like that, where it showed all the changes over time?
It was Boiling Steam.
Boiling Steam, that's it. Well, we shouldn't get those two mixed up.
Ooh. No. Turf War.
And the Mint had a substantial segment of the market, but it kind of shrunk over time, did it, if I remember correctly?
Excuse me. No, what it was that all distros like fluctuated. Like Ubuntu started very big and then got smaller and smaller over time. You know, Arch started small, got bigger over time. Pop OS kind of like, you know, it's more recent, so nothing, 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 and then has a little blip and then starts to go away. But two distros, Mint and Debian, were just rock solid. Like had just a perfectly same width bar all the way. I mean, you know, a little fluctuating, but like pretty much just straight through.
I
Like
like what.
people who like Mint, they just like Mint. People who like Debian, they just like Debian and they stick with it.
I think Debian, I think Linux Mint now, I like the fact that they've turned away from snaps and that Linux Mint were Ubuntu but without snaps, and I thought that was really good. However, I can't help but think when I install Linux Mint is usually the recommendation I give to people starting Linux for the first time, or for more casual users, for people that just want a web browser or whatever. And it's even gotten to the point now where I just show people, I walk them through the Mint installation process, and then just leave it there. So they know how to nuke and pave. You know, that's all I need to do now. My parents, who are big Mint people, they set up a printer without help. That I mean, isn't that that's game over? That's game over.
We're
Now
done.
I with Mint as well, but with Mint, when I do see it installed, the default layouts, I do think that they're maybe doing a bit too much. There's a lot of backup-y kind of stuff that they're doing. There's a lot of added stuff, a lot of tools that they're throwing in that I don't think are necessarily. I don't want to use the
Again, it's
word.
good for like a basic consumer level user. I think that those are really good things to have. But like for people like us, like if we want that, we'll set it up ourselves.
Yeah,
I
that's
don't want
probably a
that out
fair
of the
point.
box. I don't want it unless I need it. But one thing that surprises me about Mint, because I think your trajectory, I think you went Mint and then Mint Debian Edition and then Debian, right? That was sort of your path. Because a long time ago, Mint, this was many years ago, Mint introduced Debian Edition, right? And it was around about the time Canonical was starting to do some stupid shit like Unity and, you know, I mean, a lot of people would defend that, but in my opinion, those are stupid paths to go down. And that's around about the time where Mint started doing Debian Edition, and it seemed clear to me that they were sort of that was they were going to move to Debian as a base. Like what that seemed like the sensible thing for Mint to do, and they never actually did it, which is really surprising.
Well, the official line from what I read, because I sort of had the inkling that they might at some point try and go down the Debian route. But their official line was always, it's if Ubuntu does something that makes a distribution difficult, like maybe they mess around with some licensing or something like that.
Why let it go that far? Because I mean, again, this was probably 10 years ago. I mean, when did Deb it was when Debian Edition first came out, Mint Debian Edition. I tried it out, and I think I'd used Mint a decent amount, so I had a good I could compare them well. And as far as I could tell, Debian Edition was, you know, just as solid, just as good, just as featureful as the normal one. I couldn't really see a difference. It just seemed, if anything, a little bit bigger, better, because it was a bit closer to Debian. So, you know, a Debian approach worked better.
And also, as I understand it, a bit faster.
Really? That's interesting.
I
Why not
didn't
just
do
switch
any.
over? Like,
I haven't seen
why
any.
maintain the two? There must be so much
Well,
work in maintaining the two.
nowadays, I at the time, I believe the arguments were software, third-party software compatibility. However, like with things like, so there was a lot of PPAs being used at the time, and dot dev packages. However,
PPAs make sense.
yeah, however, and there, and as part of the Mint makeup, they had a Mint PPA that was thrown in. However, I don't even know what the state of PPA. It's been a long time since I ever used a PPA.
I don't think they're a big thing anymore, but I wouldn't know really if they were. So I don't see them mentioned.
I've literally seen more things that go into the sources.list than I have with PPAs. Like,
And I think anything that would have been a PPA in the past is either going to be sources.list or just a flat pack these days, right?
or an app image or anything like that. So I suppose PPAs are a bit redundant, but also one of the things, one of the big noticeable differences with Debian Edition, Mint Debian Edition, is that they have the extended security release of Firefox. Now, I believe that as it currently stands, because Ubuntu just packaged the snap version of Firefox, Mint have taken it upon themselves to package Firefox as a deb in the repositories. However, if they switch to a Debian base, then they wouldn't necessarily have to do that. But so it might involve at some point less work to do the Debian one than it would do.
But it seemed like that for a very long time. I'm just maybe some Debian person will know and can reply to us. But yeah, I just wondered why they've not just switched to Debian, because it didn't seem there was anything lacking in the Debian version.
There were, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, absolutely not. It was a very good implementation. It was, I almost at one point treated it as, it's just an easier to set up Debian, like with Debian.
Yeah, admit, no, absolutely, yeah.
The when I install the Debian, I usually get the XFCE standard image. There's a whole bunch of stuff I want to add, some stuff I probably want to take out. Setting up Debian in the way I like it does take a good couple of hours, whereas Mint, out the box, bang, you're good to go.
Oh, there's
pretty
something
much.
Nice, yeah. If you're using one of the desktops, it's something nice just to have a nicely set up version of it, so you don't have to mess around so much yourself, for sure, yeah.
I did hear, I think it was on one of the Linux podcasts, that the reason why Ubuntu has never considered KDE as its primary desktop environment, because obviously they get GNOME and they do a whole bunch of cranky shit with it, that, you know, add in the system tray and all that kind of stuff, and it's never felt consistent to me. It's always felt like GNOME or GNOME with a whole bunch of mods on it, and it never quite felt like, at least with Unity, it felt like it was a coherent desktop experience. Whereas with what they've got with GNOME is GNOME plus a whole bunch of crap that you kind of feel could break at any moment. So a lot of people, and I've talked about this on live streams and stuff before, where with people are thinking like, oh well, why hasn't Ubuntu used KDE? Because KDE, you can set up KDE to make it look very much like either Unity or GNOME, whatever, and it's got all of the out-of-the-box features. KDE seems really nice. I'm always happy with it every time I use it. The Steam Deck, of course, uses KDE for its desktop mode. So, and people I know who aren't Linux people, but are exploring the desktop mode and the hacky bits of SteamOS, they have no problem with KDE. They have no problem with Flatpaks.
KDE out of the box, like default KDE, is very similar to Windows. Like anybody from Windows is going to be quite comfortable with the UI, I think.
And it's got great, and you've got the, you could just do the little Windows key and then start typing for the application to search.
Obviously, I think the reason KDE isn't the default for distros is just because what happened with KDE, like they're quite happy, like once a version is running solidly, they quite often just like, right, we're starting all over, we're starting from scratch, you know, like with KDE4 or Plasma. Was it Plasma at that point?
Plasma, KDE4, something like that,
like it took years for KDE4 to get like stable and usable, when KDE3 worked great, you know, like I think it's their tendency, whereas GNOME was always just sort of incremental.
I don't know, GNOME has had its releases where it's dropped the ball too.
No, I'm talking pre-GNOME shell.
Oh, right, okay.
That point, they were just sort of,
The thing I've heard, and again, I'm not 100% certain on this, this is just something that was sort of bemused on another podcast, was that it's the KDE release cycle. So GNOME has a six-monthly release cycle, so Canonical, Fedora, etc. can bake it into a process.
Whereas I think
with KDE, is it a bit more sporadic or something like that? Now, as I understand it, I believe they're shoring up a release cycle. So it may be the case that in the future we might start seeing more.
If KDE settles down and doesn't throw it all out again to start from scratch. That would be, because I agree with you about GNOME. As you said, we've talked about how little we talk about Linux now. Now, obviously, with this has been a lot of talking about Linux, but the reason for that is it's partly I think being on Linux for quite a while, you don't want to mess around with it anymore. You just want to use it. So I think it's partly the maturity of Linux. Like I can use it. Back in the day, there were certain apps you couldn't get. Gaming was out of the question, apart from the three games that you could maybe get working in Wine, whereas now it's all just like pretty much any app you know, as long as you're not using Photoshop or whatever, pretty much any app I want to use, it's there and it works. Games, just I don't even have to think about whether a game works, I assume it will work with Proton, and it always has.
So I think
the problems have gone away, so I'm just using it now.
That's kind of it. I'm a little bit prepared that when I eventually have to move over to Wayland, I don't know if I'm going to have to ditch XFCE. I'm really accustomed to XFCE. It does exactly, it's old faithful, you know, and It works.
I do kind of like that. Like XFCE has always been your sort of go to, and I detest XFCE. And like, I'm not bringing that up as we've talked about that as to the why and what. I just find it funny that like you love it, perfectly happy with it, and I detest it.
It's great. It's like I don't know, Windows 98 or something like that, and it's just like you know, best Windows was Windows 98, I reckon.
No, that's the thing, see. For me, it was Windows. I don't like start menus. I don't like the start menu. I don't like the taskbar. I like Windows 3.1.
God, my dad likes Windows 3.1. But like...
like Progman, open that up, launch what you want to launch, takes up the whole screen. You're like,
chaos.
Like,
yeah, it's chaos. There's Windows everywhere. I like the menu is just nice and consistent.
I think my brain is so fucking disorganized and like non-categorical. If you give me a start menu that's organized, I mean, they are less so now, but they used to be organized by category, right? Like, you know, internet, games, but my brain just doesn't work like that. So as soon as like search-based launching came out, that's me. And the simplest form of that is D menu. So yeah, D menu, just type the name of the program I want, and it's, you know, it's ordered by frequency. So I'm usually just typing like one letter and then enter. Perfect. That's exactly how I want to launch things.
Well, kind of like that's not dissimilar to how I use it. Like one of the first things I do when I set up XFCE, and I don't know why this isn't the default, is I make it so that the start menu button on the keyboard opens up the start menu.
It's the search.
And then I just I do a little search. But to be honest, my most, like, I got what about seven most commonly used applications or scripts are just icons in the taskbar anyway. So I don't even open the taskbar that often, to be honest. Like, how often am I going to use something that's not a browser, not a file manager, not a text editor, not a terminal, not KeyPass?
I have the same thing, but it's key combos. So, like, Windows U opens my browser. Windows Y is Steam, you know, and just everything that I launch regularly. I mean, most of it auto starts, but anything that doesn't, I've just got a two key combo. It's very muscle memory. So I don't need, you know, what's the point of silly clicky buttons?
I mean, I suppose I could move to, you know, like that. Yeah, like I mean, the distance is pretty indistinct at that point, right? Like,
it really is. Yeah. We're arguing about nothing at that point. Yeah.
Yeah, where the shortcut keys versus buttons on a screen, etc. But one thing I do like about the start menu paradigm is that it's very space efficient. You've got the little bars down at the bottom, and I don't necessarily entirely like the panel world that we seem to be going in now.
Yeah.
When I say we, like Mac and Windows world. Or to a lesser extent, GNOME, but GNOME actually makes more sense than the Windowsy things. But like, I like having, because I've got like 2, 3, 4 browser windows open. So I like being able to distinguish the two straight there on the taskbar using a decent amount of space, and it shrinks in if necessary. They had it right then. And I know it doesn't look as neat as a dock, and is that maybe one of the reasons why docks are quite popular, because they kind of look quite neat, because it's all,
they look very neat, and you do the thing usually, don't you, where you click on the icon and then you choose the window, and there's like a thing, what you call it, a thumbnail of the windows and stuff. But I never like that.
Not only is it two clicks, but this is very Linuxy, the latency of the thumbnails is too slow for me.
I'm with you on that. Whenever I used any operating system with a start menu, turn the icons off, because they just make it like load a microsecond slower, and it's like, no, I want it instant.
And that's another thing I like about XFCE, but you also have this as well. You can turn compositing off. You can't do that on GNOME. Yeah. You can't do that on Cinnamon. You can on KDE, although sometimes the themes kind of assume that you do have it. So sometimes the borders around windows can be a bit like, they can blend together visually.
Yeah, but when I was on... Before I moved to Wayland, when I was on DWM, I think I just ran with the compositor by default for a while, and then I was like, "Why? What's the difference if I don't?" And it's like, it's negligible. It's like when you select and drag text in a web browser, it doesn't have that transparency, and that's about the only thing I noticed.
Shadows, you know, yeah. But it's like, and it's. This is like, you hear about this a lot in like the speedrunning community or the very competitive gaming world, isn't it? Where the latency is everything. And I do wonder if like Linux was considered more of a gaming platform, whether or not speedrunners would consider running something through Proton or Wine if they could get the latency of turning the compositor off. But maybe the Wine adds latency. I don't know.
Because from what I've read, it seems like it does. It should, but it doesn't. I think the efficiency of sort of Linux makes up for the additional layers that you're... I was going to say quickly, though. Yeah, I was talking to Anjun a bit ago about this kind of stuff. And she very much likes menus because she likes... She has, for example, like she has a lot of emulated games and she wants to browse them. I've never been a browser. I don't want to browse. Like, I don't have collections of stuff. So I always know what I want to run. If we've got an old game I'm playing, I'll install it. It'll be in a folder, and then when I'm done with it, I'll delete it, or like I won't keep it around. But she likes browsing, which I understand. Like, if you like browsing things, then menus and icons and stuff, that makes sense, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't browse. Although, admittedly, I don't even know how much I actually use the menus. I don't. Like, I don't
Wait, you'd
use
be better
that...
off on a Tyler. You'd be fine on a Tyler.
I'd be fine on a Tyler. I've used Tylers before. I like Tylers. I don't even. I at the moment.
Every now and then, though. Because, I moved to Wayland and I'm on Hyperland, which is getting itself into some trouble because the developers are very young and they've got that kind of sense of humor that can appear to be prejudice. Whether it is or isn't, I think, is debatable. But yeah, so there's that. That's, you know, I'll get into that. It's been very rapidly developed, so different things are wrong with it every time you get an update. Little things, but just like currently, I just get weird artifacting on Discord when I move my mouse around. Every now and then, there's just a little pink rectangle for a split second. I don't know why that's come up. So I do think, should I just go to GNOME? Like, it's so simple. It is what it is. But it is.
Why,
it's like you
why
say,
GNOME over anything else? Because the thing is with like Cinnamon, for example.
I wouldn't go Cinnamon. I don't like distro specific. I know you can use it on other distro. I don't like distro specific desktops. I would stick with something that's, you know, designed as for everybody kind of thing. So it'd be,
is that even a thing? ICEWM.
No, you can still get Fluxbox. Yeah, Fluxbox. There was a version of Fluxbox that you could install on Windows way back in the day. It might have been an open box.
Yeah.
Do you remember? And that was my first experience with Fluxbox. And I was just like, this is weird. With like, it had the slit. Rather than calling it the taskbar, it called it the slit and stuff. So, back when I was on Windows, I tried a lot of alternative shells for Windows. I never really got on with the open box, Fluxbox sort of paradigms. XFCE, obviously out the window. KDE's
too
very
much.
Extra, as the kids might say. So it's like GNOME. I like the simplicity of GNOME, but this, I don't know how to put it into words. But it's what you were saying. Like, it's simple, but it does quite. I was going to say. I think one of the design inspirations for GNOME was because it sort of came out at a time when it looked like we were going to go towards like sort of convergence devices. And I think they were thinking about touchscreens and phones and stuff like that, and there's a lot of that in the design. And I don't care about using it on a touchscreen or a phone. Like, I want to use it on my desktop computer. I don't want it to be good at that. And it does seem to compromise some things for a world that doesn't exist, and that bothers me.
Yeah, I don't know what the state of GNOME on phones is at the moment. Does Plasma has a phone interface as well, but isn't it just like, haven't they just decided to do two separate interfaces?
Yeah, I think it sort of rescales. It's a bit like, you know, when CSS sort of rescales for a phone. Like, I don't think it's a completely separate. I think they all do that now. The thing, so every now and then I try out GNOME. Just, I'm like, I just want the simple life. I just think that, you know, just to work like a normal operating system. The thing that always sends me back is title bars. After being on a Tyler for as long as I have, I can't reconcile myself with title bars. They are so fucking pointless.
Is Hyperland the only? Oh yeah. Well, I don't know if this gets rid of title bars, but I think GNOME has a. Are they not baking in tiling into GNOME?
It's always in KDE and GNOME. There's always like sort of third party, like what do you call them, add-ons, mods, or whatever you can install that claim to do. Because honestly, it's not even. Yeah, this is kind of what people always say. Like, you can do tiling on GNOME. It's not really the tiling that I care about on my tiling desktop, because I'm 99% of the time I'm using one window full screen or two windows side by side, which you can do perfectly well with any kind of desktop, right?
Yep.
So that's not unique to Tyler's. I'm not really bothered about the tiling. It's the lack of decoration and the immediacy for me. I don't want any UI. I don't want any icons. I don't want a taskbar. I don't want a system tray, and I don't want title bars. Yeah, title bars seem to be the ones that really do it for me because they're such a pointless waste of space.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I do like the taskbar layout, because you do have the title bar, which I suppose, yeah, like, I can see what you mean. There's a lot of wasted space there. The taskbar at the bottom, I find, is a much more efficient use of it. But the one that really got me was when GNOME used to have a standard, the top bar and the bottom bar.
The top bar and the bottom bar,
and
yeah.
Then you had the title bar as well, and you had, like, three bars.
Yep. And when you see somebody's web browser, so it would go, like, panel at the top, title bar of the window, and then like the tab bar, and then the bookmarks bar, and then you see people's browsers, and they've got like three fucking levels of panels at the top. I'm like, Jesus, you've got this much fucking screen space for your browser.
Yeah, although actually, Unity had a solution to this that was kind of elegant, and I really kind of liked it. Was that they put the file edit view menu into the title bar?
They took that from macOS. That's a Mac thing.
It is. Well, I mean, it's good. I mean,
no, see, yeah, no, yeah, yeah, I can see the logic of that. Yeah, if you're going to have a top panel, then at least, yeah, stick that stuff up there. I mean, Unity, I think Unity, because I said earlier, Unity was stupid, right? I meant it was a stupid thing to do. I think they actually came up with a very good desktop. And if they developed that, if they'd handed that off to a separate organization and just, said, develop this for Linux rather than specifically for Ubuntu, I think I would have quite liked Unity.
Yeah, my only issue with Unity, but it is the big issue, was that it was so distro specific. Like, I think I fundamentally disagree with you on the Cinnamon side of things. My case in point being that you can get a Cinnamon version of Debian, and that's like fine.
The reason I don't think, because I do quite like GNOME. I like most of what GNOME is doing, and Cinnamon to me seems an attempt to take GNOME and make it like Windows, take it back to the start menu and taskbar stuff that I don't like.
I mean, I agree to disagree on that one, but on the point of another flame war, one of the things I don't like about GNOME, and I know that I'm going between GNOME and GNOME like interchangeably, because honest to goodness, I can't settle on.
No, you should say GNOME. Fuck then GNOME. But I've listened to so many Linux podcasts that GNOME is stuck in my head now.
Yeah,
but yeah.
I actually genuinely think that there is a useful use. That doesn't make sense. There is a use for the system tray, and I know that this is kind of controversial in many ways. But
this is the flame war of our era.
Yeah. So here's some reasons I use it and like it. I can always tell if the VPN is on. So I can just glance down there and go, oh yeah, it hasn't like disconnected or something or whatever. I'm not raw dogging it by accident or anything. It's just okay, I can check that. I can check that OBS is recording right now, which I'm staring at an OBS window right now. But something like that. I do have my red screen filter on, which I guess isn't necessarily necessary. But if I want to turn it off, beep beep. And then there's my Bluetooth and my volumes and stuff. And that is really good because this is the fucking mind-blowing thing, right? I've been using a fair amount of Bluetooth lately because I'm on the B-Link mini PC. So it tends to it tends to favor Bluetooth-based things. Zero issues. Absolutely. Once I know how to like use it and what to expect, once you get into the rhythm of turning this on and that, zero issues. I've been playing Flat Out 2 with the Stadia controller here. No issues. It's a good controller, and technically it's free because they refunded me when they got rid of Stadia. I mean, it's a standard controller. You'd be able to pick up one,
No, it's quite a nice controller though. It's got the it's got the right layout rather than the Xbox layout.
Yeah. It feels real nice, and I've got like Bluetooth speakers and stuff like that. And having the little Bluetooth thing there so that I can switch the sound device over. And I can make sure that the right microphone is on, or I can make sure that the all that kind of stuff. It's a good little.
I'm okay with all of that, but why does it have to be? You've got to admit that, all of those things are useful. All those things you said are useful, but they're all things you do seldom, right? So why does it have to be on screen all the time, wasting that fucking screen? Why can't it be like either a hot corner or on a key press or something like that.
A hot corner would be fine.
Yeah.
Like a the thing is, because I've got a taskbar at the bottom, it just sits neatly in the corner.
Yeah, if you've got a taskbar, then the bigger thing is the taskbar. Yeah, but I don't have any of those. All of those things for me are done. If I want to check, like, I don't have a VPN at the moment, but if I did, I'd go to a terminal. I'd just check in a terminal, and everything else is like volumes and connecting things to Bluetooth. That's all on keybinds. Mm.
Yeah, I don't know if we've done this in a previous podcast, but I just picked up NordVPN in a Black Friday sale a long time ago because I'm not looking for particularly.
VPN. What do you use it for? Is it for geo-spoofing or is it for a bit of security or
geo-spoofing? A little bit of just like feeling like, I mean, every website you visit, you leave your IP address with them, right?
Mm,
so I like the idea of just like not leaving my IP address just trailing around the internet. Yeah. I like that someone explained this really quite well on a post at some point. It's like a VPN, like they advertise themselves as a privacy aid, whereas your ISP never does that. So a lot of it is like, I like hiding my traffic from my ISP because I don't trust my ISP. I don't necessarily trust NordVPN, but like if they get busted for like taking logs or whatever, everyone's going to know about it. It's going to be bad for their business.
Well, another thing, because there was a period a while back where security experts were shitting on VPNs a lot, saying like people think they're for security, but they're actually worse. Like blah blah blah. Which I mean their points were valid, but I think they were sort of missing the point in a way because. Yeah, like you say, you either trust your ISP or you trust a VPN, right?
Yeah.
But the difference is you can switch VPNs a lot fucking easier than you switch ISP.
Mm, exactly, yeah. So, a lot of it is just like, I know most people in the world who use the internet visit like five websites and that's about it. And in those instances, you probably don't need a VPN because Amazon and Google can work out everything about me regardless of the VPN. It's much more for like, you know, if someone gives me a shady link, I feel a lot more comfortable clicking on it. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah. I know what you mean.
It's just a layer of discretion. It's not foolproof. Yeah. And if I, you know, needed something foolproof, then I'd use something else. But the reason I used NordVPN, other than that I got it in a Black Friday sale, was the actual app is just kind of nice. It's very easy. It's a command line app for Linux. It's easy enough to install. And all I got to do is you can set all the settings just straight out of the box. There's no faffing around with OpenVPN, which is fine. OpenVPN's great. But like the out of the box experience was great. Like, you know, you've got a good choice of servers. The speed tends to be quite good. All I got to do is some very basic CLI commands to use the app. All I've got to do is like, it's like NordVPN settings, and I can see all the settings. I can see if it's got the kill switch enabled, if it's...
Does it have a WireGuard option for Linux? I know some of them do.
Oh, it may do. I've not used it, but...
Give that crack, because it is... it's a lot less overhead, I think.
Okay, yeah.
It's a simpler and more secure protocol, is my understanding.
Yeah, I do hear a lot of people singing its praises all the time, but I just went in for the like path of least resistance there. I do like having it on my phone as well. I just use the normal app on the phone. And also one of the things about the NordVPN app, and this is one of the reasons I kind of like NordVPN as well, you don't have to get the app from the Google Play Store. You can get the app straight from the website. You can just download the app and install it. That whenever they do that, that always, I don't know, it gives me a little bit of like, they've got people that know what they're doing, or they're not just doing the bare minimum. And if I'm connecting to a Wi-Fi in a hotel or in a Wetherspoons or something, it's an extra sleeve of
definitely. If you're on public Wi-Fi, then I think a VPN is a security thing then, for sure.
And a lot of restaurants these days are doing like order through with your phone and all this kind of stuff, and oh my god, like I know you're not been out for a while, but restaurants have fucking changed. That you're gonna get, you're like,
yeah. I was talking to a friend while they were going to a, what do you call it, petrol station.
Mm.
You don't have to go into the petrol station anymore.
No, you don't.
The fuck? That was my job back in the day, was the little dude in the petrol station. You don't need to do that anymore.
No, Tesco is like, you just go in.
I mean, in a way, I'm like, well, we had credit cards back then. Why didn't they do that back then? It's not like we were missing a technology to do that back then, but yeah.
Yeah, I think I think there might have been some sort of technology thingy about it. I don't know. It might have something to do with fees, because how it works when you do the go into the fuel petrol pump is you bink your card first, and I think it takes out a load of money and then it refunds you the difference after you've filled up. And I don't know if that was something that they could have done, because it's like charge back or something like that.
Oh,
Um,
that's a shame.
so
I used to, if people looked a bit poor, I'd undercharge them and stuff. And
Yeah.
also you got the truckers coming in. Also the I don't want politically correct, like travelers would come through. And both truckers and travelers would often go, like, so they bought like 150 quid's worth of fuel, or in cases it was thousands when they were filling up the whole convoy. But they'd be like, it's 100, can you write me the receipt for like 250? And I'd be like, yeah, sure. And like often they just give me a tenner. I'd be like, cheers.
I paid for petrol with cash the other day, and the person behind the till didn't quite know what they what like. Oh my God! It's like,
What's this?
yeah, they're like, oh, do you? Yeah, they literally they had the thing out, the like
Some kind of PayPal
PayPal. Yeah, it's like, yeah,
voucher?
and I almost felt like, and I don't know if this was me, but I heard a sigh going, I've got to do the cash bit now. I'm like, oh, sorry, I wouldn't have done that if I knew it was extra work or something. Anyway, oh, we've gone well off topic, haven't we?
I did have some topics to talk about, but how long you got?
I've got as long as we need. But
Cool.
okay, right, should we do other? Yeah, we've got plenty of topics. We've
I
sort
don't want to get too deep into this because it's been a while now, but I did want to briefly mention about, setting up my own Fedi instance. And just like, how that's been. And honestly, so I set up a Coma, which is the fork of Pleroma. And it was a Borlake setup. They're all a fucking Borlake setup. But I'm loving being on my own instance. It's a little bit it's got some rough edges. It's on a VPN, not a VPN. It's on a VPS that's not quite powerful enough for it. So sometimes it will lag out a bit. But I'm really enjoying just it being my own place. It doesn't, like, functionally, it doesn't make a ton of difference. But it's made me sort of think more about curating my feed. It's made me more aware that, like, this is mine, and I'm sort of allowing people to, thingy on it. I've really it's been really positive. It's made me re-engage with Fedi, which is nice.
Yeah, I spotted you around. I'm still like it is my main social network absolutely now, and has been for a good long while. Every about once a week, I'll log into something like Twitter or what's the other one? Blue Sky. And Blue Sky is just kind of boring because it's where all the liberals went from Twitter, and it's like
That sounds awful.
you would hate it more than I do, really. It's just and
Probably
it's
hate
just
it more than
like
Twitter.
yeah, like and it's just like okay, so it's just the boring parts of Twitter. At least Twitter X now is a freak show. Like it's absolutely like you can go over there and just look at the fucking freaks, and it's like how right wing's it going to be today? And it's like and like oh, is that a bot? Is that a bot? Oh, and it's like and so
That's a big thing of being on Fedi. Like, it's not that you couldn't do bots on Fedi of that kind, but nobody bothers. So we don't even think about it. I don't even have an interaction and think, shit, was that a bot? Whereas if I was on Twitter, I think every even if somebody's DMing me, I'd be like, is this a bot?
Yeah. The thing is with Fedi, there is no sniff of a bot in terms of like the people there are too weird, like you'd be able to spot it. Like there's a kind of like Stepford Wives quality to like ChatGPT content. You know what I mean? Like it's just like. And I do kind of, in some ways, I do like how unhinged and just ridiculous Twitter is. I don't like ever post there. I don't have a public account or nothing like
Oh
that.
no, isn't that like
It's
wouldn't want to be part of it, but as a spectator sport,
yeah.
great.
It's just horrendous. It's just an absolute mess. And it was failing long before Elon got hold of it. Yes, admittedly, he's. I don't even know what he's done. Like he's driving the advertisers away. He's spreading conspiracy theories and all this kind of thing. But Twitter was only ever we've I think we've talked about this on several times now. It's not that relevant. It's got like
No.
well, like 5 million monthly users.
Well, it's hugely relevant because of the influence it has on the media, but in terms of people's real lives, it's, yeah, I agree. It's never been an important platform for normal people.
No, I don't know anybody now, IRL, that even uses it, let alone posts to it.
Well, you did a little poll, didn't you, in a WhatsApp group that we're both part of. And I think we had as many, I mean, as me and you, but it wasn't, you know, it's only like a handful of, like 15 people or something. But I think Twitter had two users and Fedi had two users. You know?
Yeah, I mean, at least Fedi's interesting and it's ours and it has its messes, you know, and it has its imperfections. There are things that, you know, but also like a lot of people want the Fedi to be a lot of different things. You know, like it's not ever going to be a Twitter replacement. It's not ever going to, you know, like it's always going to be one of the niche weird corners of the internet. No matter how, you know, how much people, some people like, you know, there's like the thing about the Fed is there's lots of different people dragging it in lots of different directions. It's just going to end up being what it is. Right. It doesn't have
every time Twitter gets a bit shitter, we get an influx of boring liberals from Twitter. We've talked about this at length, but my fear was they would ruin it, you know. But they kind of have to conform to the weirdness. The weirdness is inherent now. It's part of the fabric of the place. And if you can't deal with that, you've got to go somewhere else.
Yeah. And I think a lot of them have gone to Blue Sky and Threads. And
yeah, good.
That's fine. Like, I don't... We don't need all of... You know, there's room for everyone.
Anyone who wants to go, come. Yeah, apart from, you know, Nazis will you know, defederate from you. But anybody who wants to come, you're welcome to come. But it is what it is.
Yeah. Someone. This in one of the Twitter exoduses. Someone kind of described this. They said, "Look, it's like, look, my fellow Twitter people. We got to bear in mind that we've just come from a Starbucks. We're all coming from a Starbucks, and we've just shown up at the doorstep of this lovely little tea house run by a gay couple, and it's like we've got to make sure that we don't sort of trample over everything." And like, I mean, that was very thoughtful of them, but like,
that's very good actually. That's perfect. Yeah
Hang on. But I do love how like nicely weird it is. I like how chaotic it can be. And yeah, you know, it's never going to be perfect because it's people and people aren't perfect. But it's you know, I do appreciate it. I think I found my Twitter replacement, which is Reddit, and Reddit's
really
a mixed bag, obviously. But because the thing is with Twitter, I liked it was the newsy kind of side of it, and I don't really, you know, Blue Sky. I was on Threads for a bit, but I'm not on Threads anymore. Threads was just. You know,
yeah.
The Blue Sky and Threads are kind of very similar. I don't even know if there's a solid distinction between the two, but I think Blue Sky eventually got my sense in the algorithm. But there's just nothing interest. There's nothing.
Yeah.
There's nothing that enriches my life on it. It's the same old shit. And I think that, like, in terms of people, like, in, you know, the average person. I think they're giving up on social media. I don't think social media is really what they want anymore. And I think that when it comes to socializing online for most people, it's going to be in WhatsApp groups and Discord channels and more closed communities because not every thought you have has to be published to the world. And I think it's just, you know, the evolution.
We're not really built for dealing with that many people, I think. Like, we're you know.
It's one of the reasons why I kind of think that we have such a problem dealing with climate change is that it's just a problem too big to quantify. Like,
yeah, no, I think that's certainly part of it. Yeah, I mean, you know, our whole political system is a problem as well. I definitely think that's part of it. It's unimaginably large.
Same thing with COVID. Same thing with elections. Like all of these big problems, we try and find like rules and generalizations to make sense of it. But at the end of the day. It's chaos. It's all chaos. Well, out there.
Yeah, and we're also with the climate. We don't get too deep into it, but with the climate thing, we're all aware of it. We all understand that it's important. We all care about it. We all want to do something about it. But we can't individually. We can't do shit about it. That's, you know. So what the fuck are we supposed to do? We just shit ourselves away.
But then to take that into elections as well, like I always quantified this when it comes to like, should I tactical vote or not? It's like, well, would one vote realistically make a difference in an election? And it's like, well, the number of elections. So I always think in America, they've got so many people that one vote is just so going to get lost in the ether like a fart in a hurricane. In the UK, where there are a small number of constituencies where it could be incredibly tight, a larger number in the recent election. Like, I don't know. Like, yeah, I suppose tactical voting, not necessarily, like you've got to know the lay of the local constituency, but it's very, very rare that one vote will make the difference.
And even then, it gets down to things like weighing up, like, do I vote for the Greens, who are not going to win my constituency because I want to give them more, more votes for them is more legitimacy for their ideas, or do I vote for Labour, who will be a bit better than the Conservatives on climate change? Like, which of those long term, in terms of actually fixing the problem, is it better for me to vote for Labour, who are less bad, or the Greens as a long term, and knows which of those is going to turn out to be better in the long run.
But also as well as like if one constituency is doesn't you know is botched as a result of bad strat voting or not bad voting, but you know what I mean.
I
It doesn't
know what you
like
mean.
it doesn't change the government. Like it, you
No,
know,
no, no, no.
it's and I was thinking about this the other day. I know this isn't the Dargoth hour, but Dagoth
Yeah.
hour. But I did think like surely in America it would be a better system if like the House of Representatives chose the president. So you'd vote for the House of Representatives and
So
then
it's
they
a
just vote.
more like a parliamentary system, essentially. What? Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah. No, I agree. This.
You know, it's
Yeah. Again, it's not the Dagoth hour, but yeah, the possibility having a president of one party and a house and senate of the opposite party. That's just stupid. You don't want that. Like, and it's a lot of the time. It's not like it only happens occasionally. It's quite often that you get that, right? Which means, that government is going to achieve nothing.
And we're not even dipping into the Supreme Court, which is a mess all unto itself, but
Supreme Court, the Electoral College.
yeah.
I posted on Fediat. It was the I think it was the 2016 election, because you have it's uncommon, but you have faithless electors, because they're not, also, or at least some of them aren't required by law to vote for who the democratic vote of their state chooses, so they can technically vote for whoever they like. And yeah, so some of them were voting for Sanders, some of them I can't remember. There was one that particularly made me laugh, that just these faithless electors just picking somebody to vote for. It's a ridiculous, ridiculous system. I mean, ours is only marginally better.
Yeah, we have to do a parade every time we sign a new law or something, don't we, with the black rod and the parchment on the pillow and everything,
Yeah.
and the, you
It's
know, I mean, we
one of the
have a
Green MPs was, I think it was what's the name? The Green
Caroline
co-leader.
Lucas.
No, the new one.
Oh, the new one, Carla Danya.
Yeah. She was talking about how I think I'd heard this before but forgotten about it. Like, there literally aren't enough seats in Parliament for all the MPs. So any time you want all of the MPs in Parliament, they're down the lobbies and out the doors, and ridiculous.
Like we have bigger buildings, you know, like
We could, yeah. I mean, it's a very, I mean, it's well, it's a quietist. It's not as old as a lot of people think it is, but it's a historic building, and it's kind of a cool building in a lot of ways. But if it's not meeting your needs anymore as a modern, or supposedly, well, we're not a modern, we're a fucking theocracy, aren't we? We've got, well, the more I think about it, the sadder it gets.
Totally. And
Every
it's
time I
like
remember that Charles is our king now, I'm just like, oh God, for fuck's sake,
what,
can we
Jimmy
not get
Savile's
rid of this
best mate? It's like,
Yeah.
oh my God, like, and it's like I like the fact that every royal has their own like their own sort of trademark scandal. It's like, so like
Yeah.
Charles.
Apart from Anne, right? I think Anne just sort of does the horsey things and stays out of it.
Yeah, she's the one okay one.
Yeah.
Yeah, she seems actually legit all right, because apparently when Scotland are playing rugby, she actually shows up and supports them
Yeah,
properly
yeah. I mean,
and all
she's
that kind of
still
stuff.
a monarch with an enormous blah blah blah, so I'm never going to be like, she's great, but in the context of they are royal, she, yeah,
We'll sharpen the guillotine blade for her, you know, give her a
you
nice.
know.
Schumer exactly. A nice swift one. But it's like you got Prince Andrew's on Epstein. You know, he's linked with Epstein. You got Queen Liz with, of course, the Panama Papers. And I mean, did she kill Diana? We'll never know.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah.
Charles was good with Jimmy Savile. I don't know. I'm sure. Like, there's a lot of people that don't like Prince Harry. Nazi. He went to the
Nazi costume party thing.
Yeah.
Which is still, I don't know.
As far as things that the aristocracy get up to, like it's not like showing up to a party in a Nazi uniform is not the same as going to Epstein's Island, right? Like those are two. And then what's William?
Before we move on from Harry, there was of course the was it Harry or William? He was talking about his time in Afghanistan, and
Harry, I think.
He'd somehow injured his penis. Did you? It was one of them that released an autobiography. And this was the passage that was circulating. So it was Harry. He was in Afghanistan and he injured his penis somehow. I forgot. And he was talking about how he was using his mum's favourite hand lotion on his penis. And it was very weird and very Oedipal and very uncomfortable.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, that's mom, I mean,
favorite hand lotion on his penis.
Did you say what brand it was?
I can't remember. I'm sure he probably did, but I can't remember. Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're an odd bunch, aren't they? And I think Kate Kate Middleton, wasn't she the one that made the racist comment about Harry and Meghan's baby?
Oh, really?
Maybe. I don't know if that's been confirmed, but I think maybe. I don't know. Are we going to get put on a list or something?
This wasn't long ago, and she was out of the public eye for a while, and everybody was like, where is she? Where is she? And then they released this photo.
AI photo.
It was either AI or a badly photoshopped, because like part of, I can't remember, that it was like part of a hand or arm was missing or something like that. So clearly it was Dr. Nimitz, and they released, the royal family were like, no, she's fine. Here's a photo of her from yesterday. And it's like, why do they do that rather than going, she's ill? Like, what's the problem? It's not gonna like crash the stock market if guy can't even remember a fucking name.
It's like the divine right of kings. They can't be seen to be mortal. It's like Kim Jong-un takes his shit to wear him wherever he goes. Like he shits in a box. It's like, you're not having it.
But he is actually divine, so it's different.
Yeah. And also, his sister's pretty hot. Like, I do kind of think... that, like, if something happens to Kim Jong-un, like, I don't know, like, you know, glorious new age for North Korea, right?
Oh, that could be pretty cool.
She is second in line, right? Like,
what was I listening? It must have been some Chapo thing. I was listening to them talking about Trump visiting North Korea. Was it North Korea? I can't remember if it was North Korea or China, but they were talking about him swapping haircuts. I can't remember how they got onto that, but it's funny.
Yeah, not to stay on this too much, but I always wonder, like, apparently Kim Jong Un is quite the Americaphile, and
he likes American musicals and stuff, right?
Yeah, and it's kind of weird that, like, I don't know, like. That we've been, I don't know. I feel the isolationism seems a bit, I don't know.
Well, it's never going to be, the isolationism is for the people, isn't it? It's never going to be for like they have access to any Western stuff they want, right? I'm sure.
Yeah, but anyway, so we were talking about Fedi and your.
Yeah, so that was just a quick one. So
Fedi discourse. So I have started, I actually managed to get around to installing Owncast on my own DigitalOcean droplet. And I cheated and used the wizard, basically. I had to put in some numbers. I had to like put in an IP address. I had to put in a domain.
Where's the VPS?
DigitalOcean.
They have an OwnCloud one now.
It's basically a script that fires up a Debian droplet and it installs it for you. So anyone can do it. like with a modicum of knowledge about computers, but like
Owncast, like I said, I installed a comb room, absolute pain in the ass. I've installed Owncast like two or three times. It's so easy. It just it's literally you just run a script, it asks you a couple of questions, and it's done. It's so good.
It's really good. I love Owncast. I it is to my shame that I've not streamed more. But actually, that was one thing I kind of wanted to chat about in this podcast, because it's like I'm a bit conflicted, right? It's not expensive to run, and for the number of people that show up, it's relatively self-sustaining. So I don't need to, you know, tap people up for donations. I don't need to, you know, like it's fine. I can deal with the cost of it. However, like one thing about it that is kind of, I feel that it's difficult. Like the thing that Twitch has that the Owncast almost can't have is that it has that like discoverability kind of thing. Like, you know, you can bring people in with Twitch in a way that with
Owncast. Try and do that with Owncast by having like the Owncast Fedi bot that repeats every time. But obviously that's only going to the Fedi, isn't it? So
yeah. So I'm still kind of working out in reality, like what I want to do with streaming as a concept. I'm not even at, it's not even out of the question that I might just stream to YouTube as well. I don't even, you know, like, or all three, you know, I could get a thing that spins it off into all three. So I don't really know. And I'd welcome feedback on this if people, because the thing is with Twitch is, yeah, it's great for like discoverability. If I'm playing a game that people are interested in, they'll come in. But the thing is with Twitch is the adverts are just fucking awful.
Yeah.
And it's so like, I hate the streamer culture of like donations. It's got that kind of like vibe of preachers, you know, like American preachers and stuff, whereas like, you know,
it's like a market hawker, but like for like a snake oil kind of one, not like five for a pound of lighters, because that's actually a good product.
yeah.
You know, for something nobody actually wants or needs. Like, exactly, like those ones where, like, those knives, look how this knife can cut this can, you know, that kind of bullshit, is that?
Yeah. So I don't know what I want to... The thing is with Owncast that I do like, and I really, really like this, and I like this with the Fedi, is I can try new things without fear of pissing off an algorithm.
Yeah.
Nowadays, I've decided to throw caution to the wind now, and I'm probably going to think about doing more stuff that I think might be bad for like algorithmic reasons, but decide to not give a fuck, because what's the worst that's going to happen? I was thinking about this the other day of like, oh well, should I consider maybe uploading something on Instagram, because obviously that's like a lot of places, but then I did get thinking, it was like, well, what happens if I just end up with a load of Instagram followers? What use is that to me? Like, am I doing multi-level marketing or no? It's, so I don't know. I mean, a little bit.
Yeah, that's not where I go. Like, I mean, of course you want the people who would be interested to find you. That's the thing, right? It's not about seeking out as many people as possible or anything like that. And that is the difficulty with Owncast, I think.
Yeah. So
I like YouTube as a streaming. I like watching streams on YouTube better than I like watching streams on Twitch. Partly because the Twitch interface is just terrible.
Yeah, YouTube is, in terms of just on the mechanics of it, YouTube's is infinitely better. You get to choose your latency. You get it downcodes it really nicely. And also it saves the streams. Like the thing is with Owncast I hope this isn't too much of a vanity thing, but like I could spend, you know, 3 hours doing something quite nice, and then it just disappears into the ether, never to be seen again.
I guess you record it locally, couldn't you, and then upload it wherever? But
here's the thing, though, right?
Same as it automatically handling it.
Not only is it not quite the same, but also
I think you can get Owncast to do that though.
You can, but you need the space. And it's like, I'm not gonna load on a whole bunch of streams to Hamish's like PhD, because that just seems a bit unfair. Would I do them to YouTube? No one will watch them on YouTube. They'll get like 3 views. So,
I mean, I'll always watch them.
So streams, there's like very small, like maybe a dozen or two dozen people who do watch streams after the fact, and I do genuinely feel bad for letting those folks down, because they're genuinely like, they're the they're interested. I don't want to deprive people, you know, interested people.
I watched that Hedge Wars one that you uploaded the other day. I noticed that on YouTube, and I was like, oh, okay, I watched that. I was like, was this recent? This doesn't seem like a recent thing, but I watched it all the way through. That's a fun Hedge Wars is fun.
Hedge Wars is kind of fun, albeit just worms. But I keep every now and then I keep going back and forth about whether or not I want a gaming channel on YouTube, and I torture myself with it. And I'm like, you know what? Nah, the small number of gaming videos that I really like, I'll just put them on the main channel. It's fine.
I think it's not up to me, obviously, but this is just my opinion. I think you should, the stuff you upload wherever, I think you should also just upload to your YouTube channel. You've got an audience there. If they don't like what you're uploading, they can unsubscribe. If they do like it, all the better, right? There's no downside to just sticking whatever you fancy on there.
Not now.
Other than the algorithmic blah blah consequences, blah blah blah. But I think, if you're talking about getting thrown off YouTube, then yeah, that's one thing. But if you're talking about just losing your audience, I think there's two ways to play the algorithm, right? There's either be exactly what it wants or be the opposite of that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Those are the two things that are going to do well.
Both can work, yeah. And also, I've lost my audience already. Not all of it, but like a lot. Like, we don't talk about Linux so much no more. And I'm not going to just manufacture talking points about Linux. I don't want an audience that badly.
I think for you, it's more like every two or three months you might have something you actually want to talk about to do with Linux, right? And so you do, but you're not gonna. Because, I mean, yeah, when I stumble, because I don't really watch Linux content anymore, but when I occasionally dip into it, they are just, like, manufacturing things. Like you said, they're just... It doesn't feel genuine. Back in the day, like, your channel, other people's channels, it felt like they were talking about stuff they were generally interested in. Whereas now, it's like, YouTube channels have become, even from the outset, when it's small, they want to be big. So it's a business from the beginning. So it's like, you know, schedule. Like, it's so planned. It's so pre-prepared and so not genuine feeling.
Yeah, and that's the opposite of what I want to do. Yeah. I have a vibe in my head it's a sharing kind of vibe. It's like, if I'm working on something interesting or doing something interesting, I want to invite people along for the ride a little bit. It's a little bit like when I was at university and people used to just drop by and just hang out for no real reason. It's like, oh, you're playing some video games, can I watch, da 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 da. And it's like, I kind of want that kind of vibe on,
like, your notice board thing, your pin board thing that you made, that video. I think you I would say stick that up on YouTube. I think more people are going to find that interesting and kind of cool than not, surely. Maybe I'm way out of touch, but I mean, I watched it on, you put it on Fedi, didn't you? I just watched it on Fedi. I was like, that's really cool. I really enjoyed watching that.
I love making stuff out of new old stuff. And that could be something, a direction I go. At the end of the day, I know I need to do, like, something is better than nothing. Not necessarily just for the algorithm, but just for, I don't know, for me. I don't
think it's a thing you built up, you might as well engage with it, right?
And for a long time I treated it like it was a sacred cow, in a way, like in that, like, ooh, I don't want to upset the algorithm and what, undo all the work I've done. And it's like, well, it's like the sun is going to swallow the earth at some point anyway. Everything I'm ever going to touch is going to be undone at some point. Everything is ephemeral. So you know, I think my nihilism has won, you know, it's... But in a good way, you know, like
A hopeful nihilism.
Well, someone on Fedi, this is a Fedi status that changed my mind and I have no idea where it went, which someone just posted in the most simplest of terms. You know, if you just live your life, like, you go around, you look at some interesting stuff and then, you die, it's fine. It's like,
absolutely.
Yeah, it is fine. It's like, it's fine, you know. Like,
in fact, that's a good life.
You go around, you look at some interesting stuff, you talk to some interesting people, whatever. You know, you just, that's it, really. Like, and to be fair, like, this is a super tangent, but I've got a not quite a conspiracy theory, but a thought that has dominated my mind that I can't get rid of. 2 years ago, I think it was, an underwater volcano erupted in Tonga. And science, and I was reading a couple of articles about why, how the impact it has on the environment. So the volcano, of course, going off underwater means that a large amount of steam, an excess amount of steam is in the atmosphere, which is a greenhouse gas. And it could be the thing that pushes us over the 1.5 centigrade point of no return. Right. So obviously, because the Earth is so massive and complicated, it takes years for these things to like process through. But it might actually be the case that we're already done for.
We're already like, fucked, yeah.
So let's enjoy the life that we have. And maybe we're not. Like, I'm not saying like we're doomed. I'm not betting the farm.
Like, it's not even like we should stop looking for solutions, but it's
exactly.
It should be, regardless of whether we're fucked or not, which is enjoy the time you have.
Exactly. You know, like, tell the people you know them that you love them. I love you.
Yeah.
And So that's kind of like where the nihilism has taken me. So I shouldn't like. So I mean,
more than nihilism. That's kind of like a Buddhistic kind of, you know, live in the moment. Don't, you know, all that kind of shit.
Yeah, it's like, and also, like, I think we have given internet points far too much power over our lives. Why do I care that I've made it to the 20... Well, I did make it to the 25,000 subscriber mark, which, if I say that out loud on the internet, people are going to think, oh, that's not that many. It's like, well, you try and get 25,000.
It was back in the day, yeah.
But the thing is, it's like, well, what happens if that goes down to 20? What happens if that goes down to 15? So what?
Yeah.
So what?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I don't think it works. I think your channel should be like whatever eclectic shit you want to put on there. And then people who like whatever eclectic shit you want to put on there will, you know, enjoy the channel.
I am subscribed to some.
Anything else absolutely. Irrelevant.
Yeah, I'm like, subscribed
Would you rather upload something that 5,000 people are going to love, or upload nothing that 15,000 people aren't going to unsubscribe for? Do you know what I mean? Like,
well, there you go. You've nailed it. That's it. That's exactly it. I mean, there's loads of mad shit that I love on YouTube. I know that we have a different definition for what we consider small channels, because you like channels under 1,000, which admittedly I do too. But I like channels that are maybe under 1 million, which is nowadays considered a sort of a small channel. I really enjoyed the guy that's crossed England in a straight line.
Yeah, you mentioned him a couple
love
of times.
Love that guy. But also, I've discovered this guy. Oh, did I mention this before? I don't know. This sounds familiar on Dargath Hour. But there's this guy who, like, he does a... He sleeps in car parks in his car. And he, like... And he's like... It's like stealth camping. It's like, we're not supposed to sleep here.
He went
off-roading.
Actually, you might have just mentioned that. It might have just been a conversation we were having, possibly. Anyway, doesn't matter.
But he had a video where he went off-roading with the guy that country singer guy, Rich, who did the song "Rich Men North of Richmond," which is just like, that's so random, and it's like, well, it was a good video, you know, showed you the sort of the back and beyond of the States a little bit, and it's just like, yeah, damn, I love that stuff, and it's like, you know what, I wouldn't have thought I liked to watch that, but I did. So
I like that. That's one thing I love on YouTube, is when you click on a video, like, it's like, it's something that doesn't seem very interesting to you, but you're like, let's give it a go, and you end up loving it. I love those moments.
Yeah, there's like one video I watched that talked all about the weird subgenres of rock, like how many of them there were, and all the silliness.
One of my favorite YouTube rabbit holes I went down a while ago, because one of my common ones is like local news bloopers. I love that shit. But I went down for like almost an entire day, how to process nettles and turn them into fabric.
Oh, I love that.
I learned all about it, and it was absolutely amazing. Yeah, and when you do something like it, it's made me a bit of like a nettle advocate. I'm like, we should use more nettles.
I did that with bamboo, actually. Like
bamboo. Yeah, I'm on board with bamboo. Yeah.
Bamboo's
a wonder plant.
Yeah, and what? There was another like rabbit hole I went down. Oh, yeah. John Hinckley, the guy that shot Ronald Reagan, he has a YouTube channel where he does country music. And I love it. Like, okay, so the music is not very good. Well, I don't know. Like, I don't know enough about music, but it's just a guy and a guitar, and it seems relatively, like, straightforward, chords and things like that. But, like, I think that, and he doesn't even mention it. I think when Trump got shot, I think he did a little video that was very, very, like, middle of the road. I just hope everyone's okay. I know I'm sort of like people are looking to me at this point. I just want to say, I'm a reform guy. I'm all about peace and love now. And he genuinely, like, it's kind of a heartwarming story about rehabilitation. And
Why
it's
did he
like,
shoot Reagan?
I'm pretty sure it was a mental health issue.
Right, okay. So it wasn't a
Like,
political
I don't think it
act
was
as such.
political. No, I think he was just very unwell, as far as I can tell.
Right. It's kind of amazing that somebody who shot the president lived.
He
That would never come
not
out.
only lived, but was sentenced with a fair trial, it seems, and has been rehabilitated and is out and is making a life for himself.
I like the idea that the judge was like, "You shot who? Reagan? Ah, don't worry about it. We'll get you the care you need. Don't worry about it."
Yeah, I think it's just like he spent 30 years for, I mean, I'm very bad at working out like what someone deserves, like in those kind of things, like
Well, I think we both, it shouldn't be about punishment. It should be about rehabilitation and when necessary, isolating somebody from being able to do more harm, right?
I feel
And
very
getting them,
uncomfortable.
in cases like that, just getting them the help that they need.
Yeah, I feel very
Like,
uncomfortable with.
punishing people seems pointless. On a personal, emotional basis, yeah, of course it may, it's irrational, but a state shouldn't be in the business of punishing people.
And also, I do feel generally quite uncomfortable about giving into the mob. Like, there is something I find very scary about mass aggression.
Well, I don't like it when, well, I mean, yeah, I mean, the riots recently are a good example as to why that's bad. But I don't even like it when this might sound heartless, but I don't like it when there's like a prominent court case, like, a pretty blonde girl's been murdered or something. So it's a big news story, and they give the family of the victim a lot of time, and they ask them, "What do you want from what do you want to see happen? What do you want to see happen?" And I understand why people want to see that, and I'm not saying that their voices should be silenced, but what's good for society and what the family of the victim want are going to be two very different things.
Very different things, yeah.
And I think constantly putting that on the news nudges people towards that's what society should do, is give the victims of the family what they emotionally require, which I don't think is healthy for society.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And I feel a little, sometimes I even feel like it can lead down a road of like persecution, right? Like, in terms of like finding a group of people to be angry at and then post hoc justifying it and things like that. And you see that you obviously historically with black people in the States, that was like a thing, and there'd be a lynching or something, and then they would like sort of after the fact find a reason or have some sort of flimsy
I'm
excuse to
watching
hang it up on.
I'm going through a phase of watching TV shows that I know to be very good that I've been meaning to watch for 20 plus years, and I'm getting around to watching them, right? So I've just watched Sopranos, and that was as good as everybody said it was. It's amazing. It's one of the best TV shows I've made. Now I'm on Deadwood. And there's just been, and we don't think, unless you're an actual racist, we don't think in, we're all a bit racist, but we don't think in these terms anymore, right? So the episode I last watched, a white guy killed a Chinese guy who works for a big, important Chinese guy. And back at camp, the debate was, well, obviously a white person is worth more than a Chinese person, so we can't, give them this white person as justice, because a white person killing a Chinese person isn't as bad as a Chinese person killing a white person. And then there's sort of political forces in the settlement, and one's going to make hay out of this by essentially evoking a race riot between the white people and the Chinese people because he wants the property that the Chinese people currently occupy. And it's not exactly relevant, but yeah, it's that kind of thing, right? It's just,
Right now, you've got me thinking about that meme where you've got the rich guy with a plate full of cookies. You got like the black guy with, is it like the black guy with one? No. The black guy with no cookies. And then you've got the white working class looking guy with one cookie. And then the rich guy saying, oh, that black guy wants your cookie.
I think in the I think it's Rupert Murdoch, right?
Yeah,
that guy wants your cookie.
And it's like, that to me is modern politics just like in a meme. Like that to me is the most accurate meme.
Well, that's politics for the last 300 years, I think.
If not more. Ish. The thing is, it's like, it's so simple. Why have we not cracked it?
I know. Yeah, that bothers me as well. It's like we anybody who's on board, like, so obvious. Like, how is everybody? How do people still vote Tory? I don't understand it.
Yeah, it's...
not by which I don't mean Labour's. A million times better. Labour's become worse because so many people vote Tory. I've been talking like for the last 20, 30 years. Why do people keep voting Tories?
Yeah, and there are like glimmers of it coming through. Like people know more people than ever kind of get this idea that billionaires are bad.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, and everyone knows, oh yeah, big multinational corporation like Amazon is bad. Yeah. But then, but the rest of the bits following
The telling thing is you get movies made by these big national about how big national corporations are terrible and they're the enemy and they're the ones causing all the harm. They're so secure that they can literally villainize themselves in the media and know that it doesn't, you know, there's no blowback. It doesn't affect them at all.
It's amazing. Yeah. Like, the Barbie movie was a bit like that.
I've not actually got around to watching it, but I've heard,
I enjoyed it. Like, I enjoyed it as a movie. Mm. And I think it made a lot of statements.
The most entertaining way I heard it summarized was Barbie suppresses a slave revolt.
That is a very interesting way to put it. It does throw out a lot of talking points that you don't usually hear certainly in mainstream cinema. But at the end of the day, it was a collaboration between Mattel and Warner Brothers or something. It was it's the most of the corporate movie, and but there's a smidge of intersectionality in there.
The thing is, these things, they are the product of a corporation, but they're made by human beings. They're made by people, and I mean, I think Barbie would have take the shit out of me politically, but that's a separate Dagoff hour.
Yeah. But they're definitely quite the number of YouTube video essays that I've read about like manufactured authenticity and the history of Disney starts appealing to women because women have more disposable income. Now it's appealing to certain minorities because they're getting a bit more disposable, and it's like Disney aren't validating your existence. They're validating your wealth. You know, you have become a person in Disney's eyes because you have money. You can buy the merch.
Well, I mean, the big fundamental shift in the last 5-10 years, has been the intrusion of politics into the cultural sphere and the replacement of politics with culture. And now, cultural media manifestations are micro-targeted. Everybody just wants to see their own political values reflected back at themselves. And to the point where a show like Sopranos could not be made now. I was listening to a podcast about, they were talking about Game of Thrones actually. It was a Chapo thing, and they said Game of Thrones was the last consensus reality, or the last object of consensus reality in the sense that everybody, whether conservative, liberal, communist, whatever, we all watched Game of Thrones and understood it as the same thing. And that was the last thing where that happened. And they said, for example, even COVID, anti-vaxxers and liberals and we don't even understand COVID. Like, there are people who think COVID didn't happen.
Yeah.
and it's certainly true in media now. You can't just make a show is entertaining and has complex, weird, problematic characters in it. You have to, everybody in a show has to represent people's politics back to them. And this is part of a project of making us believe that our choices as consumers are politics and have and that we can fix politics through the cultural sphere and through our consumer choices, which of course we absolutely can't, which is why they want us to believe that. But now you get, you know, every time there's a new gender swapped movie released, you know, there's a furore about, you know, on one side, this is feminism, this is saving the world, this is empowering, what would you call it? It's doing none of that. And on the other side, you know, this is the end of culture, this is destroying it, it's not doing that either. Everybody's a fucking idiot. Everybody, yeah. That, yeah.
Yeah, totally, yeah. It's actually, it's kind of interesting. I was reading about this game that's made by this console game from one of the subsidiaries of ByteDance. And it's like China's entrance into console gaming. And they've kind of got like, is it like some guidelines as to what they can and can't do? And one of them was no feminist propaganda. And I loved how like people who you'd usually associate as being relatively quite far on the right suddenly coming at the back of the CCP, because it's like, ah, see, they're keeping the kosh on wokeness, aren't they?
Is this the one where I saw a snippet of like the lead dev or somebody in the company talking about, I can't remember, it ended up being about blowjobs and stuff. I can't remember what they were actually saying. It was very weird. Maybe that was something else.
Anyway, so right, were we on the Fediverse topic?
We were, yeah. I did say I wanted to keep that one short.
Okay, well, look, I've said what I've got to say.
No, I didn't mean to cut you off. I was just saying it's funny.
I'm just going to check one thing. I'm going to turn my camera on and off because I think it went a bit blurry. Good.
I do have one that's actually, now you mentioned console games, a very quick one, because this is actually Linuxy. There's somebody on the Fedi called Joel, and he likes retro handhelds, right? And I've been kind of thinking about, I like the idea of a handheld gaming thing that I can just go and like, I can get away from the computer. I mean, I'm still playing a computer game, but I can get away from the computer a bit, you know, sit in the garden, sit downstairs a bit, you know, and just play something, right? Good for my anxiety. And you know, I had a Switch and that didn't really do it for me. But Game Boys back in the day, I kind of enjoyed Game Boys. I'm not a retro gamer. I'm not a very nostalgic person, as you know. But yeah, anyway, he bought this thing called a Miu Mini Plus, and it's very cute looking. It kind of looks like a Game Boy, obviously with a color screen, backlit color screen, and it can play every old console and computer, so long as you can control it with the buttons, up to and including the PlayStation 1. And I was like, that looks cute. And I was like, I kept thinking, actually, I want to get one of those. And I was like, well, what's the point? I don't like old games. I don't like console games. But yeah, I eventually gave in because for the first time in about 3 years, I've got a little bit of money that I can treat myself with, like 30 quid. So I bought one. I've ordered one with the intention of just like, sort of, rather than it being a nostalgia thing, just finding good games from the past that I haven't played yet. And playing them. So yeah, that's my intention. So it's called a Miu Mini Plus. It's a very cute looking thing. And it runs Linux. It runs not Android, it runs actual Linux, which is really nice. And there's a custom OS for it, which is, you know, also Linux. So yeah, when that arrives from China, I'll have fun playing with that.
Do you know what the chip is in it? Is it an ARM?
It's a ARM Cortex, yeah.
Okay, cool. I mean, I have mixed feelings about ARM because ARM, of course, that's NVIDIA's wheelhouse. And yeah, I mean, NVIDIA's not the best. It's not the best. It's not the worst or whatever. But one of the things that I am kind of interested about this ARM 64 malarkey is that it could actually like stop noisy fans. It could be an end of noisy fans.
Yes, I would love a passively cool computer. I'm going to drop a picture in chat of this device because I do find it very cute. There you go.
Right. Okay. I've got to work out how to do this without butchering the stream.
I mean, people can Google it. I was just sort of to show you, but yeah, it's a very cute looking thing. It's got like 6 hour battery life. You just drop it in your pocket, rechargeable, obviously. Drop it in your pocket, and yeah, I'm just looking forward to having a little play with that.
Nice, nice. I've never managed to see eye to eye portable gaming on a small screen.
It's
to me, it's always been either at a desktop PC the vast majority of the time, or Maybe on a console, but only as casual. However, over the past couple of years, I have been enjoying some mobile gaming, but not the same types of games. Like, I
Yeah, I know
suppose
what you mean.
like Wordle and things like that that I quite
Yeah,
enjoy.
yeah. I
Yeah,
just
that's
I
fine.
dislike phones as actually I dislike I had a, like I say I had a Switch and I disliked the Switch because it was very uncomfortable to hold. I would my hands would cramp in minutes in you know like 10 minutes because it's too thin. Whereas I think the Game Boy, a game as a kid with a Game Boy, like I would play on that for hours and never got uncomfortable. So did you never have a Game Boy or anything like that?
No, I never had anything remotely
I
portable.
guess you're in that sort of age thingy where it, because yeah, me, my age, it was very much Game Boys, and then handhelds kind of disappeared for a bit, didn't they, really?
I think so, before the Game Boy Advance, and I only knew
Yeah.
like
Oh, that's
one
true.
or
Yeah, there
two
was
people
Game
with
Boy
them.
Advance and then Color and PSP and all that lot.
And there have been games, there have been,
Oh,
I've
DS on
played
Game.com.
Pokemon Blue and Red and Yellow on the emulator,
See, I
but
never enjoyed this is not I because I did think I could go back and like play Mario and play all the games that I never really answered. But I've tried to play Pokemon many times and just I don't enjoy it. Same with Mario.
it's like a clicker for me. I quite like it.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know because I
But
like turn-based combat.
only Gen 1. I can't. I want
Right.
it. It just gets silly after Gen 1. You start. It's.
Got like 1,000 Pokemon to know the names of.
Yeah, and I did try and grind through the animated series, but they replaced Ash Ketchum's voice, the main character, at about season 9 or something, or season 6 or so,
No,
and my brain can't do
I
it.
remember the cartoon show. I was a bit too old for it, but my sisters would watch it, so I'd watch it sometimes. I just enjoyed Team Rocket. I just enjoyed their energy. They were really fun.
Team Rocket, like, I would love to, like, I don't know, like, yeah, their energy is amazing. Like, I
Yeah.
more Team Rocket. It's the Team Rocket show.
Yeah. They were cool. I think they came across like kind of communists, like Soviet communists. They had that kind of feel to me.
And they did a lot of cross-dressing, which,
Yeah, cool.
it's
Yeah. But
cool.
no,
All right.
I was telling my niece about like, because I showed her this thing I was getting. She was like, "That's cool." I was like, it was mentioned the original Game Boy." And like, she was asking about it. I was saying like, "Yeah, like it didn't have a backlight, so I'd be in the, like if we went somewhere in the car as a family, like on the way there, I'd be playing on my Game Boy, and on the way back, I'd sort of be playing it by street light. Like as we passed the street light, I'd play a little bit, and then we'd pat and like wait for the next street light, play a little bit more."
You could get a little light that bent
Yeah, oh
over it,
yeah,
I
no,
think.
we were too poor. I had like three games for it. It was Tetris 99% of the time.
Oh wow. I could never. Tetris panics me.
I understand that. Oh, it's a panicky game, yeah,
It's
for
a
sure.
panicky game for sure. Actually, to
Yeah.
be fair, Flat Out 2 panics me as well.
I get panicked by get I yeah, I mean I have anxiety disorder, so that's part of it, but so Flat Out 2, let's just say, like it's a was it 10, 15 years old that game? 2004. So is it 2004? It's
That's
old anyway, that's the point.
20
And
years ago, yeah.
it was using
Tw
GameSpy for its multiplayer, right?
hmm.
And GameSpy shut down many years ago. But the devs updated it very recently. They did a bunch of stuff, and one of the things was they re-enabled network play, so you can play it online again. And I was like, great. And I went online, and I'm very good at the game. Like, if I join online races, like 9 out of 10 times, I'm going to win, right? I was just, I got into the lead and just immediately started having a panic attack. I was like, I'm just sweating, heart beating, like really fast. I was like, I've got to finish this race before I fucking pass out.
The thing about Flat Out 2 that panics me is when the stuff is all over the road,
Oh,
and
really?
it's like,
When
oh,
messy.
is that stuff? Yeah, when it gets messy, and it's like, oh, and
Well, because the
I.
physics is so good, if there's just some, if there's just like a bit of a fence on the ground and you go over it slightly wrong, like your car can go off the road because of that. That can ruin
Yeah, but you're right. Like, I appreciate you getting me into it because I've got, was it like 4 hours on it so far or something?
you. Yeah. Are
And
you doing the career?
yeah, I'm doing the career. I'm doing the
Yeah, the
unlocks.
career's great as well. I think it's a lot of modern games. I think they. Because it's got the usual thing of you win races, you get money, you upgrade your car, you can buy new cars. But it seems like it's doled out at just the right level, and modern games either give it too quickly or too slowly, I think.
Yeah, I like it. It's good. I definitely have been sticking with the four-wheel drives.
Oh really? Yeah.
Yeah, that's the control that they have. I'm sort of in that stage now where I'm working out certain cars are better on certain tracks. So
what I'll say about Flatout 2 in terms of the cars is they're all quite hard to drive compared to most other racing games. They're tricky to drive. Like the front wheel drive, you know, they'll do what a front wheel drive car does. They'll understeer or whatever. And you know, the powerful like rear wheel drive cars, the back end will come out on corners too much. But I mean, this is true of all racing games, and I think it's far more true of Flatout 2. It's like the harder to drive the car is, the better it is, or you know, the better it is, the harder it is to drive. So learning to drive the really hard to drive cars is actually really rewarding. But yeah, absolutely start with the four wheel drive ones where you've got, you know, it's easier to not fuck up and like work your way up to the because the best car in the game is the Bullet GT.
Mm-hmm.
Not technically the fastest, but is the best car in the game, and it's the first time you drive it, it's like, how do I make this go around a corner? Like every time, even a gentle corner, you try and turn it, you just end up like backwards. And yeah, but you just over time you get to grips with it. And like now I could turn that on a dime, or whatever the expression is. Like that car is part of me now.
The thing about this particular game, some games have it and some games don't, is that the cars are actually like substantially different. Some games, like the cars are fundamentally like they're the same, you know, like there's a little bit on cornering, there's a little bit in this, but like I've flipped between two four-wheel drives for different reasons. Like the weight matters, you know, some courses, if there's too much like bumps, a heavier car will be more controllable on the bumps. And on the tarmac tracks, sometimes a front wheel drive that's a bit faster might possibly be the edge that I need. Because if you've got lots of long straights on concrete, the four wheel drives are not really the best that they can be.
Weirdly, like most modern driving games, they don't have proper physics. They're hovercrafts with more friction. Like they don't really model the wheels and what the wheels are doing on the surface. Whereas in Flatout 2, if one of your wheels leaves the ground, you can tell, like, and the car behaves like it should when one of the wheels is off the ground. And, you know, when you accelerate and the weight is pushed to the back wheels, that makes a difference. And when you brake and the weight is pushed to the front wheels, that makes a difference. And that's not present in a lot of even modern racing games, which is weird.
Yeah. And also for a game that's, like 20 years old, apparently, like the graphics are great. I love the fact that it's super responsive on my middle of the road computer, but it looks perfectly nice.
I would have been fine if graphics stopped there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's 2006. Yeah, so, yeah, 18-year-old game.
18 years old, wow. Mm. Well, I have to get it a drink.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as good looking as a modern racing game. Like, we're not making that claim, right? But the thing is, it looks nice. It's not in the... like the early days of 3D where it looks, you know, noticeably old. It's like if you squint and it's on a smaller screen, you'd be like, that looks great, you know?
Yeah. And the physics are great. I mean, when I'm driving the four-wheel drives, I will deliberately crash into stuff to get the But, like, can you do that with a rear-wheel drive? Because I feel like that would just throw you off the road.
Yeah, one of the things, because, you know, I got so good at the game that, like, winning the races was not a challenge anymore. So what I would challenge myself to do is to win by destroying every other car. So, and I would do that in the Bullet GT, which is like an American muscle car rear wheel drive thing. And yeah, I've won every race in that game by destroying all of the opposition.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm in a four wheel drive and I go to overtake one, I will give it a nudge to be like,
Really, again, in something like what was the one you were playing on Stadia for a bit? Which is an enjoyable game, but...
The grid,
right. Okay, so if you tap the back end of somebody in grid, nothing happens at all. Their car doesn't move at all. If you slam into the back of them, they just sort of, like, shunt forwards a little bit. Whereas in Flat Out 2, yeah, you can do like a proper pit, just the gentlest tap on their rear end, and it's like, whoa, and they go spinning off. Yeah.
Oh, but I'll tell you what, though. Yeah. The fish tailing. Oh, my God. That's where I panic. Is the, yeah.
You'll get the muscle memory. You'll get the feel of it. And eventually, yeah, that will happen, you know, very rare. I mean, it still happens now and then, but very rarely be doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, but I do like it, and I'm definitely getting better at it. I remember when I first played it, I'm thinking this is quite a new experience. But this is gonna sound so silly, but the graphics of a racing game matter to me.
Yeah,
And because it's an experience. It's an experience. I'm not a serious racing gamer, so I like a good it. For me, racing games scratch an itch. And yeah, there's a few things that need to be satisfied. Obviously, it needs to run smoothly, because a racing game that doesn't run smoothly is just awful. And it needs to have an ambience. And Flat Out 2 sort of ticks all those buttons. And it's nice that it just seems to run. It hasn't missed a beat on a modern computer. So
I think another thing, I think it's to do with the ambience. Modern games are either like very like racing tracky boring or very like quirky silly, and I think Flat Out 2's got it's in the good sort of middle ground where it's got like some of the tracks are in a woodland and they feel woodlandsy, like it feels like the woodlands, and they make use of that environment, like they feel distinct, and some are in farmland, some are racetracks, some are roads, but they make use of those environments better than I think a lot of games do.
Yeah, absolutely, and you're right, you're definitely right about the, like, if something's too arcadey, it doesn't feel like you're driving a car. It feels like it feels like Beat Saber or something, you know, like
and the arcadiness in Flat Out 2 is the whole nitro system, right, where you are given nitro, you just press the button and you go faster, and you're given nitro when you either do jump where you're in the air or where you crash through scenery or crash into another car. So there's sort of like a risk reward thing with the nitro, which is nice.
And there are bits of a map. There's one map, I think it's one of the aqueduct kind of map, where
the canal,
that's the one. Yeah,
yeah.
You got the finish line right there, and then you can do a jump towards it, and if you've got no nitro, you can do it, and then it gives you the nitro just as you're like in the air. And then it gives you that extra bit of, usually you've either won or lost the race at that point, but like to go over the finish line with the fucking
I think it does a good job of feeling, you know, realistic in big inverted commas, you know, it feels real, it feels physically and at the same time very cinematic. Like sometimes when you crash, even if it loses you with the race, it's like such a spectacular, like you're rolling and rolling and rolling, and you're like, that looks so cool.
Yeah. And also one of the things that I really do like about it, and I don't think any other game has this certainly as well, but I don't think I've ever seen it, where you, like, I think I might have like messed up at some point around a track and I was in 6 out of 8. Most other racing games, I'd quit and restart at that point. But kind of know that, well, hang on a minute. If there are only like 5 cars in front of me, well, 2 of them could take out each other at any given point. Like if two of them get into a bit of a barney or whatever, you know, so I could squeeze up to second, and second's enough points to win me gold in the cup.
You'll play it like an actual racing season where, like, I got third, but like, as long as I win the last race, I'm good for, And also, like you say, I mean, it has rubber banding for sure, but a lot of racing games, if you're at the back on the last lap, it's just a procession. You're like, you can't really, but because Flat Out 2, so much can go wrong.
Yeah.
You know, it's a traffic cone on the track and somebody's car tips over and that takes out the 3 cars behind it. Like you can win no matter how. Yeah.
I never feel safe in first place until, until I'm on the final straight. And even then,
if you're behind, it's that risk reward thing again. It's like, I can crash through that fence and, you know, risk taking myself out and get, but if I do it successfully, I get a bit of nitro and I can use that to boost, you know.
And that's like, I think that comes into play a little extra with the 4-wheel drives, because that extra speed is really what you need in a 4-wheel drive on the straights. Like with a 4-wheel drive, you can crash into a bunch of stuff, and because you've got the four-wheel drive, you're less likely to spin out. But then at the same time,
When you get to the third class, the last class, you're going to like it, because the second get best car in the game is a four-wheel drive car.
Nice.
You're going to enjoy that.
Yeah, and I like the upgrade system's good as well, because usually all of the cars will have something deficient in them that you kind of want to straighten out with the upgrades. The upgrade system is perfect. It's not too much. It's not too little. But it gives you a small amount of economy to, like...
Yeah. And there's also some of the upgrades, the sort of body ones and stuff, that there are trade-offs. Like, they will make your car stronger, so more likely to survive the race, but a little bit slower. And I tend to, you know, I like going risk. I like going glass cannon, so I won't take those ones. I'll only take the ones that make me faster.
Yeah. Some of them, yeah, like, will reduce the strength of it as well. And
Yeah. Some of the opposite. Yeah. The bigger nitro tanks will make it, like, less strong, but, yeah.
Gives you the yeah
great game. I think it's the best racing game.
It's certainly on that track, pun not intended. it could very well end up being, I mean, I don't have a strong favorite racing game.
Before Flat Out 2 for me, it was Wipeout, because again that just feeling of just when you just nail a circuit, you just perfect it. It feels transcendent. I don't think either of us are, like, we're not car people. This isn't about being car people. It's just there's something kind of zen about racing games.
Yeah, it scratches a very visceral itch to me. Like no other game seems to do quite the same way. Yeah. Like, it's just like, because I don't like driving that much in real life.
I never liked it.
I consider it a little bit of a chore. Like, it's a thing you've got to do the thing that you really want to do. That being said, I can see the appeal of maybe, like, driving around a track in a good car, but that's money that I don't want to spend, you know, because, like, in my mind, like, I could get into a car crash tomorrow, and if I put a lot of money down on a car, that's just gone, really.
Yeah.
So I don't really like the, like, even a ch- like even my cheap car, secondhand car, is still a lot of money. It's still, like, the most expensive thing I own, I think, really.
Yeah.
And I'm not particularly wedded to it, other than its sheer utility. But
it is. Yeah. I do wish cars were seen. Well, I wish transportation was seen as only utility, and then we'd have better public transport.
Yeah, I like trams. Trams, like, it seems like this massively untapped technology that we could
The last thing I went to with a decent tram system, this is 1.4 trams and 1.5 of against, Manchester. I spent a couple of weeks in Manchester with a friend, and the trams there are great. Like, you just get on them and they're quiet and they just take you where you want to go, and it's relaxing, and you're going through the streets, so you're seeing the city. The downside is, they're silent, and I nearly got run over by trams so many fucking goddamn times. Mm. You just don't hear them coming.
Yeah. I wish every small town had them, just even if it was just shifting old folks from the top to the bottom of the town. The high street's on a hill. Like, you'd really be helping the older folks get out and about.
Yeah.
How easy it is to lay trams down. Like, if I'm like, so I'm not the biggest music person. So if I want something background, if I'm playing some board games with friends or something like that, sometimes we'll put on like a white noise kind of YouTube video, such as, like, cable cars in Switzerland or something like that, just to, like,
yeah.
It's a bit of noise in the background. It's something you can look at when you're bored. You know, it fulfills the same role as background music, but and they just look amazing. And also, like, they're so much easier to build than roads. Like, they go up, they go up mountains, and it's like, they seem so easy to lay. They seem very unintrusive when it comes environmentally. Yeah. They seem like you don't have to worry about batteries. Cause I know when it comes to transport, particularly with electric cars and so forth, batteries are a big deal because disposing them and all that kind of stuff. So things with less batteries, that's good.
You also don't interfere with, like a tram could intersect with a cycle. You know, you need some kind of warning point. But because they're sort of below the level of, you know, what you're riding on, you know, they're embedded into the road kind of thing, aren't they, the tracks? Yeah. So you can cycle over them perfectly well. Or you drive, you know, they don't interfere with roads. Yeah, so you can sort of mix them in with other transportation networks perfectly well.
It's I feel like with our country in particular, we're very bad at infrastructure these days. HS2
Without
sort
a
of
doubt,
illustrated that. It was just like the way that it was implemented was just kind of awful.
I
And
think
a lot of
the
people.
whole sort of Western world, or northern, whatever you want, however you want to categorize it, we're all terrible at that now. Some better than, France and Germany better than us, but yeah. Sorry, I didn't interrupt you.
It doesn't matter. But trams, yeah, I fucking love them. I like,
Trams are great.
you know, and it's not
Streetcars for any Americans.
streetcars. Oh, is that what they call them? Like Sam, the thing in oh, I saw. Do you know GeoGuessr? I got landed in Denver, Colorado, and that looks like a very underrated city. They had trams there.
Have you seen Denver Airport?
No.
You're in for a treat,
Well,
right?
what's Denver Airport
So,
like?
when they built Denver Airport, they commissioned a bunch of artists to just like do whatever, right? So, outside there is a huge, looks like fiberglass, glowing statue of a bright kind of blue bucking bronco horse with glowing red eyes that looks like some kind of fucking demon from hell.
Nice.
Inside they've got these murals of it's hard to talk about the whole thing, but part of it is like some fascist super soldiers in like a post-apocalyptic thing, and like things about diversity and natural diversity and really weird unsettling murals. There's a sculpture that's like an open briefcase with a gargoyle coming out of it. And there's all these conspiracy theories built around like the weird imagery and stuff, and those are really
Nice.
interesting. But just that horse statue that's outside of it just looks like the whole, it's like a weird art installation. I really want to go there just to see it all. It looks really cool.
I totally Denver just seems like a really awesome city, and it feels very undercelebrated.
Yeah, no,
Just
for sure.
yeah, it just seems
Apart
that
from
also they have bike lanes. There are bike lanes in
in the
Denver.
prominent in the Hunger Games,
Ah.
District 1 is Denver, I believe.
Oh wow, yeah.
There
So
you
I
go,
don't know,
chat.
look.
There's the horse. See if I described it accurately.
Okay.
I'll give you the murals as well.
Right. Okay. People at home can kind of see it. There it is.
Here's one of the mural images. Another detail from the mural.
Right. Actually, what I've done, I've kind of changed the Discord layout a little bit. Anything you put in chat now goes down at the bottom of the screen.
Okay,
Oh my
cool.
word.
Yeah, this one. It's a many panels of mural. These are just a few of them.
Wow.
Absolutely insane. Like imagine being a bit nervous and going for a flight and seeing all this fucking shit. Love it.
That's amazing. Right, have we got more on? Have you got anything on the list you want
I had things,
watch?
but I think. Do you want to go play some Flat Out 2?
Sure, but there is one I want to knock out whilst we're here,
Yeah. I'll put Kep
because I
on while
don't.
you're starting off.
So we talked a little bit about where, so for some reason or another, I checked out the Midori browser, which used to be bundled, and I think still is, with like most distributions repositories. And I checked in with it, and it's kind of changed a lot, and probably not really for the best, if we're honest. Did you actually have
Is
a
it
look at
based on
Midori?
Chrome now?
It's based on Firefox. In fact, in reality,
Okay, cool.
it just feels like a reskinned Firefox.
Oh.
And it's like, so the Midori browser seems to be an entirely different thing. It seems to have been bought out by this company called Artisan. And it seems to be just a repackaged Firefox, but with some of this cloud stuff built in that you can get a subscription to. And I couldn't find the prices anywhere. It's like you got to sign. It's one of those services where you got to sign up for a free trial or something in order to work out how much you're going to pay. It seems that they're not particularly forthcoming with the costs. So I think, if I remember correctly, it was originally based on WebKit for the rendering engine, but
Was it because WebKit was based on KHTML, right? Which came out of KDE project originally. It was their HTML rendering engine, and then
I know that.
KHTML. So was it originally KHTML thing, or is it always did it was would it just start with WebGTK?
I don't know that far back. In fact, I know that Blink's origins are in KHTML. I
Yeah.
assume the WebKits are the same as well.
WebKit and Blink are the same thing.
Well, they were the same thing, and they've diverged a bit now, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean they come from the
Those
same.
the
Yeah.
same
Yeah.
origins, yeah. Yeah. So I just think, I don't know, that I found that to be a little bit sad in a way, that it just, like, Midori just seems to have been, it's still open source, but I don't see how it offers anything that Firefox doesn't
It's
offer.
interesting that there are quite a few browsers based on Blink or WebGTK or WebEngine, right? But it seems that you can take with Blink or whatever, you can take just the engine and put your own UI. Like the browser I use, Qt Browser, is based on WebEngine. But with Firefox, it doesn't seem like you can just take Gecko and build your own browser around it. It seems like you have to take the whole of Firefox and then that's it, really. Just a Firefox clone.
And for some reason, and I don't entirely know why this is that even though you can get lots of different themes on Firefox, it still looks like Firefox. It's still very
Yeah.
obvious that something's a Firefox clone, even though it has a different theme.
Yeah, that's kind of what I mean. All the Firefox browsers just are Firefox.
And in
With
fact,
either features removed or a couple of features added, that's pretty much it.
with Midori, and I don't have any belief that they've taken out any of the telemetry stuff in the same way that, like, LibreWolf does. I quite like LibreWolf, and I use LibreWolf as a secondary browser, but the thing about LibreWolf is that a lot of websites need the DRM, was it that
Yeah.
little DRM box ticked? So LibreWolf, and I know this is by design, so it's not a real criticism of LibreWolf. And I think the kind of people that would want to use LibreWolf as its as their main browser will be happy to ignore the websites that
They're
require
factoring that
DRM.
in, right? Yeah.
But the so one of the websites that I came up against and was the HBO character guide for their for House of the Dragon, because of course, typical, like Game of Thrones, everyone's got the friggin' same name and everything, so they released a handy online guide to work out who was who, and it required DR it required the DRM thing, and it's like,
I do wish
why?
Firefox had fought harder against DRM at the time. Because they did fight against it. They fought against it very hard. But when whoever it is ruled and they said no, DRM's got to be part of the web standard, Firefox just went, oh, okay. I wish they'd gone like, no, we're not implementing it. Because I mean, I know they've not got the market share to influence that decision. But they're still on like 20%, aren't they? On computers at least,
I
something
think it's a
15,
lot
20%.
worse than that.
It's a
I
lot
think
worse
it's
than that
close.
now.
I
Maybe back then it was closer. Because I mean, if 20% of the web, I don't know, maybe they wouldn't have cared. But because it was such an obviously bad decision.
But I think nowadays Firefox is down to like 2 or 4%.
Oh, really? They're that low?
It's really bad out there, yeah. So
Is
I
that
don't
taking
even.
phones? If you take phones into account, it's virtually all phone. You know, there's far more phones than computers, and phones are all basically running some even. No, Safari, isn't it? But on iPhone, everything is a wrap around Safari. But Safari is still WebGTK. It's still the same
A WebKit, you mean?
fundamental WebKit. Yeah.
Which is
So,
actually
but
not as good
if you
as
take phones
Firefox.
out of it, what's their share then? Because I think that's more relevant to, I mean, I know it's not relevant to the modern world, but it's relevant to Firefox, really, since they're
I
not.
do.
You can get. I mean, I use Firefox on my phone, but I assume 99% of people don't.
Oh, there's a Wikipedia page. That'll be vaguely.
Also,
Browser market share
everything.
worldwide. Oh, Firefox is 3.35. So
That's
it's an,
including phones, right? That's all
but that's
devices, I assume.
including phones.
Yeah.
Underestimation differences in measurement. Chrome. But well, Chrome. The latest. Oh, Chrome's at 65% now. Safari is about 20%. Edge is like 5%. which is basically Chrome. So,
all three are Chrome. Well, sort of.
Yeah, mobile, something, something. Oh, I can't. Right, desktop share. I don't know. I can't seem to find any desktop market share worldwide stat counter. It is Chrome is like 65%, and Firefox is 6.64%.
Okay, sorry. Okay. So oh, that's a shame.
Yeah. It is a shame. I know that. Is it the Linux Foundation have taken Servo under their wing?
Oh, really?
I think so.
In what capacity?
I don't know if it's code hosting or putting people on it or something. Okay.
I don't even know how Firefox could. And I know how they lost their market share, but I don't know how they could get it back.
They'd have to offer something presumably that Chrome couldn't. My guess, and it's not ideal, would be that they market themselves as the developer's browser.
They tried that, and you know, there's not enough developers is the thing. I mean, the way Firefox at its inception, when it, you know, as distinct from what was it called, the Mozilla browser before Firefox,
Netscape, was it? Oh no, Mosaic. Exactly.
Mosaic. Yeah. Well, anyway, whatever. It was just lighter, right? It was lighter and faster, and it had tabs. I think if they stuck to that and stopped, and instead of chasing Chrome's features, I think they would have retained, or at least not as lost as drastically, their market share.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not just browsers, right? Like, Google has sort of gobbled up a lot of the internet.
Mm.
So... That you know, like, Android is going to have had an impact in its growth as a market share. Chromebooks are going to have had an impact. The fall of Microsoft Internet Explorer is probably going to have had an impact.
Yeah.
So it, and I suppose, I think it's kind of fate was sealed once websites were being designed for Chrome with Firefox as an afterthought, if that.
Yeah, but that comes after they've lost their market share, doesn't it? You can't until one browser is dominant, really.
Yeah, but I mean, at what point would you say that Chrome was dominant? When Firefox was at 20% or when it was at 10%?
Yeah, to be fair, yeah.
So I hope that it can at least. I'm not the biggest. I mean, the only reason we care about market share is because we want websites to support it and we want to be able to use it, right? Like, I don't care.
We want a browser that's not made by, first of all, not made by a profit-making enterprise, because then, you know, it's always, they're not just making it for us, but especially not an ad agency, you know, an ad selling business, which Firefox kind of are now, so that muddies the waters further. I think the only hope for an independent browser now is somebody taking Servo and making like outside. I don't think Firefox can do it. I think it's got to. I think somebody picking up Servo and making their own browser around it, which I don't know how practical that is. I think that's the only way it comes back.
It might be. It might also be the case though that Chrome start stifling new browsers entering the market. Although, start stifling new browsers that are entering the market. You know, by manipulating web standards.
I mean, they're kind of doing that. I think one possibility though is that because Google's starting to sort of crack down on ad blocking bit by bit. I mean, it's a very slow process, but they're certainly, YouTube's fucking unusable in Qt browser now because of it. Ironically, if I use a browser with a proper ad blocker, I can use YouTube no problem.
Yeah.
But the problem with Qt browser is it does some sort of basic ad blocking, which YouTube detects as ad blocking, so I get the thing saying ad blocking is against our terms and conditions or something like that, so it literally blocks me from watching the videos. It's really fucking frustrating. But anyway, yeah, so they're starting to crack down on ad blocking. I think they're removing it, or are they getting rid of... What's the...
Manifest 2.
No, what? Yeah. And but aren't they specifically sort of, what's the main ad blocker called? U-Block Origin.
U-Block Origin.
Yeah, aren't they doing something to make that not work anymore? I just caught the edges of something through that.
Something like that. Yeah. This could be where Firefox gets some of its market share.
Yeah,
it could be maybe. The ad blocking browser. It could be the thing about Firefox that makes me uncomfortable is that they, similar to Google, will introduce a feature and then take it out in the next release. Firefox over the years have brought in some interesting stuff. Like they brought in video chat. Well, that went. They brought in, they had RSS bookmarks. They were really good. I really liked the RSS bookmarks.
Yeah.
Got rid of that.
There's also the problem with the company. Like there's the Firefox Foundation, which is non-profit, and that's what people say, oh, it's made not for profit, but they're owned by the Firefox Corporation, who are for profit, who certainly engage with ad tech, right? And there's telemetry in Firefox. It is made by a profit making thing, and they are involved in advertising now, so I don't think Firefox can be the solution anymore.
No, we can fork it.
By which I mean
maybe
that company. I mean, the technology under somebody else. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. The trouble is though, because a browser requires so many developers and so much work, that a fork for Firefox, it's not like one person can fork Firefox and keep it going.
No. Well, something I was going to say is like it's a topic we've sort of dealt with in various ways over the years, but I don't really care about the web anymore. I don't really care about this stuff about browser politics anymore, because even if we're using an open source, you know, ethically made, you know, made for the user's browser, the whole web is fucked. So who fucking cares? Web browsers are these applications that you open up. They immediately use 2 gigabytes of fucking memory to show some text and pictures. The web doesn't really exist anymore. It's just these siloed 5 sites. You know, I use YouTube. I use the Fediverse. I don't really visit websites anymore because they've all but disappeared. What's left is fucking what's the shitty blog platform that you have to pay to whatever, and
it's not Substack or Medium or
fucking Medium. Everything's on fucking Medium, and like it's just the web is a depressing place now. So I've been thinking I'm going to get rid of my website or just make it a link, you know, a link to all the other places. I'm actually going to start writing stuff. I'm going to put it on Gemini and Gopher. I'm just going to write things that I'm interested, because I'm always on the web. I was nervous about like, what's the point of me? Because like I like to work through ideas by writing them down for myself, right? And I might as well put that up somewhere. But if I put that up on the web, it's like I'm making a statement that like this is worthy of anything, and it's not. It's just my meandering thoughts, and I don't care whether if somebody reads it and finds it helpful, that's amazing. But it's not what it's for. But if I put it on Gemini and Gopher, I don't really feel that pressure. So I'm writing a bunch of stuff. I'm going to put it on Gemini and Gopher, and when I've got 2 or 3 things on there, I'm just going to get rid of the stuff on my website, make it a link thing. I've also been thinking about, just to like recapture what the internet used to be, I've thought about setting up a BBS.
Okay.
It's like a community thing, and like if I can get you involved, that'd be great, and it's just like telnet in. Like you telnet in, and it has like maybe like a message board and like a couple of games that we can compete with each other in and that kind of stuff. Like I think that would be fun, right?
Yeah, definitely. See, when you mentioned this offhand a while back, and I don't know if the web is that dead yet, right? Like, I think the Fedi is to me, it's like that's the glimmer of hope.
Do you visit websites though? Putting aside the corporate web apps that we all use and Fediverse, like, do you? You know, Google something and go to the website of a personal website of a person you don't know and read their stuff. Does that ever happen anymore?
Okay. I'm looking at my tabs now and not really. Now I can make some asterisk based arguments. I can say, well, I'm on Postio. I've got my Postio window open. But that's still just email. But I do like Postio, and I like it so much more than Gmail or anything like that. Like it's so dependable. It's so like
That's not the web though. That's it. I mean, email is a separate. I know it's delivered by the web often now, but that is a separate. That's one of the protocols that the web swallowed, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'd be relatively as happy on Thunderbird or using email outside of the web. Sure. I do like the web client. But yeah, okay. So it's, but it's not essential. Everything else is, yeah, one of the big webs.
I think I don't think our brains have quite caught up with that, because when I think of the web, I still think of, you know, websites that you visit and think, you know, because Google used to be good, and you'd Google something and you'd find somebody's personal website where they're an expert in it, or they're interested in it and they've written about it. Then you got, you know, you follow a few links on theirs, you're on somebody else's personal. That web doesn't exist. Like, it literally does. I mean, bits and bobs, of course, but it, like, realistically speaking, that web doesn't exist anymore. The web that we think we're engaging with, we're not. We're engaging with a few web apps.
Does it make a difference if I tell you that my website has recently hit 1 million views?
That's really fucking cool. I mean, I'm not saying these things don't exist anymore, but in our day-to-day practice, how often do we, you know? And your website's great. I love you. I visit your website every now and then and see if there's anything, because it is a genuine, it's like an old website.
Yeah,
it's a relic.
Yeah, when Gemini was very new and it was just starting out, and like, we were all playing around with it, I really like that was fun. That was really enjoyable for me, and I got rid of it, because the thing is with Gemini is that you have to just pay. Yeah, you know, like, you have to keep a server going, right? It's a little expenditure that is a bit annoying, and, you know, the first round of budgeting that I do, if I'm ever in a situation where I need to tighten my belt, it's,
I think there's also there's not enough of Gemini to replace the web in that. I know it's never intended to replace the web technologically, but replace the web in the sense of that explorable thing. Like, you can explore it two or three times, but then you've kind of hit the edges of, you know, you're butting up against, you know, the edges of what you're interested in.
I really enjoyed doing the little voice note thing.
Yeah, they were cool. I think we should go back to a little. And maybe the BBS will be fun for that kind of thing. Because I was thinking, again, web forums were such a huge thing. And, you know, of course, some still exist. But really, they've been replaced by, you know, Twitter, Facebook, Fedi, Discord, WhatsApp. They don't really exist anymore, you know, in terms of being a broad practice of people on the, I mean, and of course web forums replaced NTTP back in the day, right? News groups were the web swallowing another protocol, but at least it was, you know, people running their own forums for a community of people who are, you know. Anyway, but yeah, I would like to, I know we can never go back, but I'd like to recapture some of the feeling of that, because I miss it.
Yeah, I feel a little bit of that with the Fedi.
Yeah, no, you know, me too, but it's not all of it.
No, it's not all of it, no.
And it's it doesn't have that same explorable, unknown, you know, you never know what you're going to find kind of thing.
So, yeah. I mean, I don't know, I'd like to see Gemini get a bit more of a resurgence. And the thing is, with things like Gemini, is these things always go like up, like their route to success is always a bit.
I wish Gemini hadn't done the HTTP, not HTTP, obviously, the SSL thing. I wish it had been unencrypted.
Yeah, so that, I know what you mean.
You know, retro computing, you know, low powered retro computing stuff could deal with it. And also just, it's just that little bit of overhead for setting up a server.
Yeah. Yeah. Even though it's easier than ever before. I do think that the SSL everywhere is not, it's not necessary.
When the data's static, as it, you know, 99.999% of the times on Gemini, it's just static. It's literally plain text. Because SSL protects you against being man in the middle, right? It guarantees you are seeing what the server intends. If I'm just reading somebody's, you know, blog equivalent, it doesn't really matter that much, does it?
No, and it's not like there aren't ways around SSL, right? Like, it's not like.
Well, yeah, if you're on a public Wi-Fi network, that's all out the fucking window. They've got control. Yeah. They can inject whatever they like. Yeah.
Well, and also things can be so, like, it didn't stop spoofing. It didn't stop phishing. It didn't stop. Some people.
I'm not saying get rid of SSL. You know, you know, transactional stuff, and when you're supplying, you know, if you're supplying your bank details or your credit card details to a site, of course you want
anything SSL, that requires a username and password, you know.
What made it necessary everywhere is everything being fucking dynamic, everything being like WordPress and like, you know, dynamically generating a static website essentially, which is another wrong turn we went down.
Yeah, well, that I'm surprised that we stayed in that wrong turn, because surely everything being dynamic has put a strain on the servers that didn't need to be there. Like, surely having one of those systems, like, I can't even, I'm blanking off the top of my head what they are, but one that just generate, you put in all the details, it generates the static site for you, and then you just upload that, and you, like,
Well,
that.
yeah, for a personal blog, that makes a ton of sense. But again, for they're not the ones leading, like, you know, the big sites go dynamic. So that's the sort of the aesthetic expectations almost. So like, even if you're running just your own blog, you want it to look that way. So you run, you know, we're gonna be negative. We started off nice and positive and saying nice things, and now we're talking about the weather again.
Well, should we wrap it up there, and it's and play some Flat Out? Sounds
That'll
good to me.
lift
All right,
us
thank
back.
you everyone for joining us. Let us know things, comments. That's what we want. Like,
Is no things.
you can keep your like and subscribes, but like, a bit of feedback's always good. Comment sections are good. We've got emails. You'll find us on the Feddie. You probably already follow us on the Feddie if you're there. Toodaloo.
Bye-bye.